So you haven't gotten anybody to fill that position yet?
Good evening, and welcome to our special meeting. This is September 28th, and we are starting our meeting tonight with interviews for the Planning Commission position that's open. Let the record show that all council members are present, and we'll go through our salute and all of that stuff at 6 o'clock when we reconvene. We'll just go straight to our interviews right now. We have three candidates. Two Susans and a Jamie. So if you'd like to, let's start with Susan. Introduce yourself, tell us why you'd like this position, and move down the line, and then we'll ask you some questions. Okay.
My name is Susan Stewart. I am currently on the Promotions Committee. I'm also on the Chamber Board and a member of the Merchants Association. I have a business in Morro Bay that I've had for 3 years now. I've lived here for 21 and a half years. My kids are sort of almost grown, and so it's kind of time in my life to give back. I do have some experience with building and development. I've been an archaeologist for about 14 years now. I worked for a painting contractor as well.
In towns and cities were quite intriguing, and architecture and transportation systems were of interest to me. The latter part probably is why I'm comfortable with the roundabout that we have here in town. Professionally, I'm trained as an instrumentation controls technician, primarily in the power industry. I'm currently employed at the Morro Bay Power Plant. As a volunteer, I'm a member of the Morro Bay State Parks Trails Committee. We assist in trail maintenance and developing new trails and design. My personal interests lead me home and away. And my wife and I enjoy our home projects and gardening. We bicycle, take our walks around town with our dog, Jesse. And we enjoy camping and travel as often as we can, and when all that fails, we take a staycation here in Morro Bay at our home.
Okay, and Susan again.
Hi, I'm Susan Schneider. I have a consulting company I've had for the past 12 years in the energy industry, actually, interestingly enough, and in fact, your company was one of my clients at one time. Also, several of my clients are building solar plants out in the Carrizo Plains as well. So I have a lot of experience in that area. I've lived in Morro Bay for about 3 years. We did remodel a home here, so I have some experience with the local building codes. I'm a Cal Poly graduate, though, and so this was more of a sort of a return to the area from a long time ago. I have a lot of experience on homeowners associations, neighborhood associations, a lot of positions where I really had to get a lot of people with diverse interests and backgrounds to try and agree with each other, which wasn't always possible. But anyway, a lot of experience sort of mediating between people that don't agree with each other and trying to find some common ground. So I'm hoping to use that in this position as well. I have a lot of experience in contracts and legal work. Followed most of the major battles recently here, not only when we moved here, but beforehand, since we knew we were going to be moving here several years earlier, so I did subscribe to the local paper even before we got here. So I was looking for an opportunity, since we moved here, to try and contribute back and use some of my background and these kinds of details. They don't always make you the life of the party, but they're extremely important in making sure the city works well, and I'm looking forward to contributing to that.
Okay. Let's start. Carla, you want to start with some questions? All right. Rick.
All right. Hi, everybody. I'll start at the end. Susan Schneider, I think, right?
Yes.
Susan, have you ever served on an advisory committee that deals with the application of existing land use codes and ordinance to submitted design proposals where the requirement is to advance the design or the creation or revision of land use code provisions?
Well, I was involved in that in more of an advisory capacity. I was president of a homeowners association and also served on the architectural control committee for two homeowners associations. So we were involved when people had applications to improve their homes or improve their property. We had to not only make sure that the applications were were consistent with this, with the city codes, which obviously the city also had a voice in, but also to make sure that they were consistent with all of the CCNRs and other local regulations in the neighborhood, as well as trying to make sure that they were consistent with the neighborhood character. So it wasn't a formal advisory board other than embodied in the CCNRs.
All right, thank you. And Jeremy, understanding that you'll make future decisions based upon the hearing record before you, have you considered your own view, vision about Morro Bay's future and development or redevelopment? And if so, what is that vision?
Are you talking specifically in relation to my job? Is that what you were referring to? Or are you talking about specifically
as,
a vision?
As sitting up here on the Planning Commission.
Okay. Yeah, I'm here tonight because I'm committed to Morro Bay. This is where I ended up, and I've participated in past workshops and made my comments known. And in regard to the State Parks Trails Committee, it's another process. It's something where, you know, there's a stewardship there. We want to take care of what we have. We want to develop what makes more access for us as trail users, and it's a similar process. As far as a vision, I think we have we've got a beautiful town here, and we want to maintain, you know, this really cool culture and character that we have. So, I'd like to participate in that process.
I think the laws can be very helpful with that, because there are guidelines that we can follow. And within that, you look at the human interface with your community that you're living in and what are the needs there. But until the laws change, you can't step outside of that. So I think that can be useful in helping make decisions like that. And seeing where maybe laws need to be changed or adjusted or come back to the council for guidance, that kind of thing.
Well, I wish we had three openings.
I know. All right. Noah, how about you?
Sure. I think generally I'd just like to ask each of the applicants a question that speaks towards sustainability. It's a pretty broad term that's thrown around quite a bit, but it seems to be one of the top topics for our society right now to discuss, and the Planning Commission certainly speaks to that as far as your role there and how the future of the city could be defined and how we will interact with our community into the future. So I guess I'm looking for generally or very quickly what sustainability would mean to you in relation to your role on the Planning Commission, and maybe an example about what you think would be really helpful with our community and as a priority as we move into the future, especially if it relates to what you would be dealing with on the Planning Commission and the scope of work that you'd have there. So why don't we start with Susan on the end?
Okay. That's a fairly broad question. I think there's a number of sort of macro and micro things that the Planning Commission can do to promote sustainability. One of the things that's very interesting to me, we moved here, we walked around before we redid our landscaping as part of our remodel, and looked at different kinds of gardens and things that were in the city. And I know it's a big water issue. I think our water bill has exceeded our power bill almost every month. And it seems to me that the Planning Commission, as part of the general plan, could be promoting conversion of some of the landscaping in the area to more drought resistant, more drought tolerant landscaping, and as well as it looks like some of that has already been done in the public buildings. But I think that would also set a good example. I also think it would be helpful for people to, in terms of making the community more livable, doing things like putting codes on the web, for example. It's very hard to get information, at least I found when I was doing my remodeling. The city staff is extremely helpful, and we really were very, very grateful to them. But it is a little bit hard to get information without having to actually come down and bother people. So I think making more information available on things that individuals can do, as far as building codes, zoning codes, and home improvement, I think would make it just a more livable community in general.
First of all, I think our general plan needs to be completed. That's out there. It's that and the local coastal plan are still elements that need to be complete, and I think some of those are addressed. Currently, I believe we have a plan and process that in regard to maintaining water, and that would be containing water flow on the property as opposed to water runoff. I believe that's something that's currently we have in place. Sustainability is something that I think most cities are already addressing those issues. New building designs are requiring a lot of those issues. We build homes with energy efficient materials, and that in itself promotes sustainability. If we have a house that is more efficient, we're using less energy, and so on and so forth. So some of those sustainability programs we do have in place, and we have to continue to promote those. Thank you.
I think I'd take it maybe a step further. I mean, I think there's obvious issues with resource sustainability, so, you know, water and energy. But I think there's a cultural sustainability as well and a community sustainability, so that if we don't have a healthy economy, which means looking at the kinds of businesses that we are bringing in or encouraging to grow, the kinds of housing we're doing, if we don't have housing that can sustain families, then our schools start to close, which we've seen. So I see a bigger sustainability picture that goes beyond resource use, which is of obvious importance. If we don't have enough water, we have no business building, or we need to find ways to conserve the water that we have.
Commission meetings, and I think all three of us would probably follow our own niche in that way. I think what I bring to the table is, as a homeowner, I've gone through the building process before in the county as well as in the city of Morro Bay. Along with my background, I think I have the tools that allow me to understand planning documents well. And with that, my position as a homeowner, I think, brings a balance to what we have on the commission right now. I believe we've got an architect. We have a builder. We have, I believe he's a public works employee as well. So I think I bring that some balance as a homeowner who understands the building process. I think I've got that sense of community from that standpoint. I think that's it. Thank you.
I think I would probably bring the cultural perspective. Also, owning a business has changed how I look at things in this town and how it's changing and developing. And I think I tend to operate best as a consensus person, so rather than, you know, trying to find the common ground and work towards that rather than an adversarial person. So I think that would be my character on that board.
Well, I think I'm actually a little bit of a stickler for rules. I mean, people should know what the rules are, and they should follow them. However, I've also had a lot of experience in being able to creatively apply rules to move things in a really positive direction. And so what I would see my role as on the Planning Commission is first of all, making sure everyone is aware of what the rules are, which is not always the case, and then seeing how to work within those rules to build agreement and to move things in a positive direction. So it's sort of a mixture of adhering to the rules and yet using them and using the flexibility that's allowed in them to move in a positive direction.
I'm going to start with
Susan on the end. Oh, you're both on the end. Susan at the other end. What experience do you have, or do you have, I should say, experience reading plans?
Well, I have a lot of experience reading plans, actually, just in my personal life. I said we did remodel a house here, and I've actually remodeled and sold several houses before in other communities. I participated in the formation of community parks as part of my role as a soccer commissioner earlier in my life in Berkeley. And also, in my role as a consultant, I actually do a lot of work with power plants under development. And so I do have the opportunity to examine plans, suggest placement of certain facilities in a way that's more optimal and will better comply with whatever local building codes are applicable.
I'm going to go ahead and ask the same question. I actually had two questions, but we don't have enough time, so I'll go ahead and just ask the same question of the other two. Either one.
I've had experience with plans as far as developments on archaeological sites. So you're primarily looking at the earth moving end of things there. But then I've also looked at stuff in terms of built houses too. But that would be an area that I would be needing to do more homework in. But they don't scare me.
I've had experience in industrial construction, ground-up projects. Probably notably would be the Genentech pharmaceutical plant up in Vacaville. Participated in that construction and startup. I've also, my first home, I drew up the plans to do the room addition and remodeling on that. I think our second project I did that. And most recently we did a new construction here in town with an architect. I'm very familiar with prints and drawings at work as well, so I don't think that is much of a problem.
Taryn, Planning Commission, it's a lot of work. It takes a lot of time. You got to be traveling around town. You got to be talking to people. You got to be studying all the documentation and everything. Given your own work lives and personal lives, is this going to be a problem? Or have you already made that decision that you know you can handle this? And how do you feel about that commitment of time? Susan Stewart. This is a two-year term because you're filling in for the second half of a term that has been vacated. So it goes through January of 2012. All right. Wrapping it up. Any comments to them as we vote?
Council, just a reminder to identify who your name on your ballot as well.
For written pink ink, is that enough? I will say something while Andrea's putting them together. Susan, I know you and I know how good you are, but I like you where you are, and I know that's not fair if you want to move ahead, but I really like you where you are. So I'm given the other options we have here, I'm going in another direction. And Jamie and Susan, you are both excellent, and this is a really hard decision, and I hope whichever one of you doesn't get it will come back next time, because I think in January, I believe we have some terms that are coming up then too. So it's just a few months away, and I hope you won't lose interest if you don't make it the first time around. Anybody else want to make comments before we announce the... Okay. All right, Andrea, we'll await your decision, or your tally. Our decision or tally.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. We have three votes for Jamie Irons, one vote for Susan Snyder, and one vote for Susan Stewart. To recap who voted for whom, Betty Winholtz, Rick Grantham, and Carla Borchard all voted for Jamie Irons. Janice Peters voted for Susan Snyder, and Noah Smuckler voted for Susan Stewart.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Jamie. We'll look forward to seeing you on Planning Commission, and... Both Susans, please don't be strangers. Thank you. All right, and we're going to take a short break before we start our regular meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you. On with us. Okay, there we are. We're going to reconvene our September 28th meeting and let the record show all council members are present. We will begin with our moment of silence, and tonight we can direct our thoughts to the family of Joe Giannini, certainly a founding father of this community, a former mayor, very much involved in our fishing industry and establishment of it and so many other things that he contributed to, as well as his family. Very valued member of this community. So during a moment of silence, if you could send your thoughts towards his family. Thank you. Thank you. For our pledge tonight, we're going to have Captain George Reese come forward, and afterwards we're going to have him give us the fabulous news that we have about our fire department. George?
Okay, everybody ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Normally, police and fire would give their report tonight. I just wanted, because we're so happy about this news, and he can also explain why Chief Pond isn't here to deliver it in person. So, George.
Okay, thank you. Is this on here? I feel kind of odd. It's Chief Pond's moment here. I feel like I'm taking his thunder away from him, but I am proud and pleased to announce that the City of Morro Bay and the Fire Department did receive a Fire Act grant in the area of $1.6 million towards the construction of our new fire station. That is not the whole amount that it costs for the fire station, but it's a good chunk of it, at least 50% of it. Actually, it's a little more than 50%, so we are very happy in that. I've got some other news about the fire department if you'd like me to continue on about 6 weeks, and then we'll have that in service and ready to respond to calls. Last week, we also did a point of distribution drill for a drill that we do every year along with the county health department, and it's in it follows the process of a influenza outbreak, and so it's a mass vaccination exercise. And last week, we had 630 people attend the flu vaccination exercise. Also, the Alyssa Ann Roosh Burn Relay is coming to town October 8th, and we'll be stopping at Del Mar School to deliver a burn prevention message and raise funds. We also responded to a mutual aid fire down in Moore Park last week. We were down at the Guyberson Fire, and we were there for, I believe, 4 days, and everybody returned safely. And that's all I have for you.
Great. Thank you very much. We're just really excited about that news. For our business person tonight, we have Joshua Bergren from Wells Fargo. So he's going to tell us all about Wells Fargo's doing in Morro Bay.
Thank you, City Mayor and City Council members. It's a pleasure being here tonight and kind of give you our recent announcement. If you haven't been by our new space, we are inside the local Albertsons here in Morro Bay. Even though we have remodeled a few months ago, we are excited to invite all in the Morro Bay and surrounding communities to our grand reopening celebration that's going to be this Friday, October 2nd. We will have the hours of 9 to 6. We're going to have food. We'll have entertainment. We will actually have Jack the Dog live for all of the kids to enjoy. Many prizes. We have many local businesses that are extending some donations for us to support and get the name out of the community. Also, which we don't typically have a privilege to do on a daily basis, we're going to have many of our volunteers and partners actually visiting with us that day. So any of the business or community members that want to talk to somebody about payroll services, merchant services, commercial lending, home mortgage, investment services, we are going to have them all under one roof at one time. Here at Wells Fargo Bank in Morro Bay, we have always and always will be a full-service branch. Prior to our remodel, we were pretty much a closet. And we've been very excited with the partnership that we've had and the support of Albertsons by allowing us to expand and to bring this new location to the community and to all of our customers. Without the joint partnership, and again, I'm going to plug Albertsons one more time, without that joint partnership, we would not have been able to make this possible. A lot of our customers come in and say, do you like your new space? And we ask them, do you? It wasn't for us. It was actually for our customers. So again, I invite each and every one of you, council members, the public. Again, we're going to have a lot of fun this Friday. It is for our grand reopening, October 2nd. But if you can't stop by, do know that we are a full-service branch. A couple of the services, people wonder when they come in the grocery store, they ask us even, can I make a deposit here? You know, they don't realize coming into a grocery store that they can do full-service banking. I, as the branch manager here in Morro Bay, I am the personal contact for all of your customers, for all of you, for all the business owners. We do SBA lending. Yes, we do it in my branch. We do payroll services in my branch. Our credit card merchant processing, for those that have local businesses, we guarantee next day funding with your Wells Fargo account by having your credit card services with us. And yes, we do it inside the grocery store. Our investment partners, our mortgage partners, home equities, I could continue to name so many services that Wells Fargo offers that many of you may know of, but don't think that they can do it in our branch. So again, I'm inviting everybody out to enjoy our grand reopening. We're going to have food. Again, Albertsons is a sponsor. We're going to have giveaways, raffles on the hour. So even if you don't bank with Wells Fargo, even better, come in and see what we have to offer you, our consumers. One other thing I'd like to mention is many hear about our merger with Wachovia. The merger has happened. Even though we do not have Wachovias here in the area, we are one Wells Fargo. State by state, city by city, we continue to migrate our Wachovia branches, our Wachovia team members, under the one umbrella of Wells Fargo. And I'm pleased to announce that we will continue this migration to next year, where Wells Fargo will grow into 39 states. And every Wachovia employee, every Wells Fargo employee, every Wachovia customer and Wells Fargo customer will continue to have that undivided attention. So in conclusion, again, as the branch manager, call on me. I'm there inside Albertsons. Everybody's got to do their grocery shopping. Come in and see us. Make me your personal banker. Make me your personal contact. See what we have to offer. I invite you all to come out. I look forward to seeing you all there. Come in, have fun. And if you can't make it on Friday, October 2nd, we've got some great promotions throughout the month. So I thank you for this time to speak tonight.
Thank you. That's one of the most enthusiastic presentations we've ever had. So we'll look forward to that on Friday. Okay, other announcements. The one I would like to make is that we, previous to this meeting, chose a new planning commissioner to fill out Bill Woodson's term. Jamie Irons will be starting with our next meeting, and we look forward to...
A way to keep people from having to go to prison. 50% of the people that get out of prison will not be on parole. Only the highest type crimes will have parole attached to their release. $250 million is going to be taken from rehab programs for drug treatment programs and so forth for offenders that are nearing the end of their terms or getting out and returning to society. So parole agents will, instead of overseeing 75 parolees as they do currently, they'll be changed to 40 parolees per parole agent. So that's the big news from our friends, our neighbors down the street. The Morro Bay website, that's what we have up there now, and I think I want it to be showing the right-hand side under news and announcements. On October 26th, the Morro Bay Rec and Park Department is hosting a free and open senior health and wellness fair on Monday. That's October 26th. Some of the things that are going to be offered is what's called a car fit program, where a senior or really anybody, but this is designed for seniors, can take their car in and they'll be fitted in the car for correct positioning, for mirror placements, for all the ergonomics of driving, so to speak. This is not going to be any kind of an enforcement deal. Nobody's going to judge your ability to drive. It's only to make it safer for you. So please don't feel at all intimidated by coming down and getting a car fit. These are trained people that have been doing this for a long time, and they'll be happy to take care of you. They're also going to be doing memory tests. There's going to be flu shots provided free if you have your Medicare card, or if you have Secure Horizons, you can bill Secure Horizons for the cost of that. For anybody else, they're charging $25 for the flu shot. And the other thing I want to talk about just briefly is the other flyer I gave you, and I want to talk about this probably for the next couple of council meetings so the word gets out. But this is a very helpful website that people that don't have adequate insurance can use for their prescription med needs, and you can go on this, and if you look at that column to the left, you just click on the medication that you take, and then it'll take you to all the different programs for that particular medication, whether it's from pharmacies or the drug maker or social programs or assistant programs. It'll take you through the whole thing. There's a whole list for government programs, state-sponsored programs, Medicare. There's programs specifically for children. So it's a fantastic website. If you're paying a lot of money for your prescription drugs and your insurance is not really adequate, then you need to go to needymeds.com and see what kind of assistance that you can get through them. Also, we've got our Harbor Festival coming up this weekend, and if you're interested, we're having the second annual Rock to Rock Fun Run scheduled during the Harbor Festival on Saturday beginning at 8:30 a.m. You need to call Rec and Park to sign up for that, right, Andrea? Yeah, thanks. And it's about a five-mile run. A lot of fun, not too strenuous. And that'll be on Harbor Festival Day. Yeah. well.
Okay, Noah.
And
sorry. I thought you were finished.
I think that's probably it.
Okay. Noah?
Thank you. I am the city's rep on the Air Pollution Control District Board, and we had an interesting meeting last week with quite a few events, which we'll hear about later from Kelsey. But the thing that I really wanted to highlight, and I will probably talk about this more, is this new program called San Luis Obispo Car Free. It's focused on tourism, and what the Air Pollution Control District is developing is a promotional tool for travelers that come to our area that either are traveling without an automobile or are willing to pledge to not use their automobile once they arrive. And what's exciting about this program is it's really focusing on partnering with the business community and developing some strong promotional tools for those businesses that offer an opportunity for discounts or promotion for the community members or visitors that utilize that sort of a traveling experience. They're calling it a carefree vacation instead of play on the car. What's nice is the businesses that this is open to includes restaurants, hotels, attraction-type businesses such as a kayak rental business or touring business. And the idea will be a major promotion on the new website, slocarfree.org. Questions from local businesses. If you're interested, you can go to the website, and there's a business application section to register. And once again, the website is slocarfree.org. And I'll continue to update us all on the work that Mr. Kandel and I will do on this program, getting participation.
All right, Carla? No, go ahead. We'll get back to him.
Okay, thank you. Good evening. First of all, when George was giving his update on the good news about there, really want to extend recognition, too, to the firefighters, the chief, and Bill Murphy and some of the others who have worked so hard to get those grants for us for the fire station and the squad that we just recently got. It's, you know, been through their hard work of grant writing that's helped us get those, and I think they've just done a phenomenal job, all of them, some of them in particular, that have really done that work to get those, and it takes a lot of time to write those grants. So I really hope people realize how much time and work they put in doing that. I'd like to remind everybody that the football game's at home this week at Morro Bay High School, so I hope everybody goes out for that. My EVC meeting was not much to share. It was just really talking about the media in San Luis as far as KSBY and the Tribune and which you would prefer to advertise in. So for us right now, not much to share for the city. Also at the high school, the FFA is having a drive-through barbecue. If anyone's interested in supporting the FFA, they can call the high school 771-1845 for tickets for the drive-through barbecue. October 4th through 10th is National 4-H Week. So I hope everyone has an opportunity to find out about 4-H. I see one of our 4-H leaders here this evening for our local club. Meets the first Tuesday of the month, and hopefully she's going to tell us about 4-H tonight since she's here. San Luis County Creek Day is this weekend, October 3rd. I didn't see Morro Bay participating on the list. I think we did ours with National Clean Shores, but there's a creek cleanup in San Luis Obispo. And that's all I have for right now.
Okay. Rick, you had another one?
I'm sorry, I forgot a couple of things. When I was in Philadelphia a couple of weeks ago for the Partners in Community Action, I took my own toiletries, and they would come around to the room every day and bring me stuff. And so this is the kind of thing that we have a drop-off station in our library here in Morro Bay, and this is the kind of stuff that the homeless shelter could really use. So if you feel like cleaning out your bathroom closets and seeing what kind of stuff you got in there and bag it up and just bring it to the library and drop it off, they'd be greatly appreciated. Partners in Community Action takes care of food banks, homeless shelter, Prado Daycare Center, senior health screening, all these wonderful programs, and they all need assistance. So if you're looking to donate anything or warm clothes, cash, food, toiletries, any of these things would be accepted and very much appreciated. The 10-year plan to end homelessness, the group was submitted to and approved by the Board of Supervisors about a week ago. We'll be holding our first meeting in about 3 weeks. And I feel real good about this because there are some people on this committee that aren't just going to stay still and not do anything. And it's an action bunch of people. So I feel real good about this group and that they're going to move forward and do something significant for the homeless population. And I guess it's not too early to announce it because it's going to be here before we know it. We're going to be doing the annual Thanksgiving dinner, the community dinner, and the joint project between the Morro Bay Rotary Club and Peace Officers Association of Morro Bay. And that'll be on Thanksgiving Day at the community center. We'll have plenty of time to talk about that in the future, but just wanted to give you a heads up that's going to be happening again. Thank you.
All right, and now I would like to take item A2 off our consent agenda. It's declaring October 2009 as Ride Share Month. It's a proclamation, and we do have somebody here to tell us about that. So if I could have a motion approving A2.
Move to approve A2.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. We have Kelsey Greer here, and she's going to tell us a little bit about these wonderful $100 bills.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Kelsey Greer, and I'm with the San Luis Obispo Regional Rideshare, and I'm just here to quickly fill you in on the new promotional campaign we have coming up. Oh, sorry, I cut
That's
you
okay.
off.
Yeah. All right. I do want you to
Yeah.
We're just proclaiming that October 2009 is Rideshare Month. So tell us all,
Great.
All the deals.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah. Sorry about that. If you are around for Bike Month, it's a lot like that, but this time we are challenging teams of 2 to 5 people to, it's not just biking, to take the bus, telecommute, carpool, vanpool, bike, just any way that you can to get around without driving in your car alone. I don't know if you can see them, but they're the Commute for Cash buttons. We have them at our office right downtown San Luis Obispo. If you get one of these buttons, you can ride the bus for free, and that's North County Shuttle, RTA, Slow Transit, and Paso Express. So all of those buses will be offering free transit during that week. You can also pick up a button at the farmer's market, and you can also just send us an email, and we'll be happy to send you one. And we also have bike energizer stations happening this month. That's the last week. We are raffling off prizes for carpoolers. There'll be prizes daily. We have vanpool contests. So there's lots of fun things happening, and it's a great time to get involved. So I really hope you guys all take a look at the website and consider winning some cash for your commute this October.
Great. Thank you,
Thank
Kelsey.
You.
And I forgot an announcement, too. Tomorrow, the annual Morro Bay Winter Bird Festival brochure goes online, and the chamber will have some brochures to hand out. A lot of our events fill up really fast, like by 2 days after it comes out. So if you are interested in some of those, please look at our website, morrobaybirdfestival.org. And then we have our police report.
Janice, what are the dates for the Bird Festival this year?
January, I think it's 15th to 17th, 2010.
Okay.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayors and Council. As far as the police department, our Citizens Academy is going real well. And our attendees seem to be really enjoying it. We're getting a lot of good feedback from them. So we're going to continue to hopefully do at least one of these a year. We had to cancel our last Project Surf Camp a couple months ago. I don't know if you recall, because of the shark sighting. And so we rescheduled that again with the Morro Bay Surf Company. We're going to be assisting them with another type of Project Surf Camp in October coming up. And several of our police employees volunteered the last time, and they plan to do it again. It's a real fun event. We're also doing a bicycle rodeo in conjunction with the Morro Bay Kids Camp, scheduled for October 16th. A part-time dispatcher candidate passed the background and is proceeding with the remaining of the testing process to include the psychological and the medical. And so hopefully things will go well, and we'll get that person on board pretty soon. Sergeant Brian Millard graduated from the Supervisory Leadership Institute, commonly called the SLI, and it's about a year-long, very intensive course. It's similar to what police management employees go through, which is called the Law Enforcement Command College. It's almost like a little mini master's degree program, so to speak, a lot of intense learning and homework and things like that. And we congratulate Brian on graduating from that. He comes back with a lot of knowledge and a lot of accomplishments from that course. And as you know, we're still struggling with our staffing issues on a daily basis. We've been real busy. We've, for some reason, seen an increase in DUI activity and DUI arrests for the last couple weeks. And despite the staffing troubles, we're still doing the best we can. We just we want our community, you know, we ask for their patience and understanding while we get through our temporary staffing issues until we get some people hired and get them on board. And that's all I have to report.
Okay. Administration, Andrea.
Good evening. An update on the dredging. As you'll recall, the Army Corps of Engineers has awarded a $7.8 million dredge project to Morro Bay. That contract went to AIS Construction of Carpinteria. The notice to proceed looks like it's going to be happening at the end of this week, and you'll see some mobilization of some equipment at the Rock parking lot. That will all be happening after Harbor Festival weekend, so that worked out very well. The one thing that you might notice immediately is there were some buoys placed out in the Target Rock area, and that's basically just to delineate that area to keep all equipment out of that area so as not to disturb the otters. Secondly, last week we held our annual review of the management partners study that was done in May of 2008. Of the 38 recommendations originally presented to the City Council, 14 have been completed, 13 are scheduled or in progress, and the Council has not given any further direction on the remaining recommendations. And then last, I think everyone needs to jump in or would like to jump in on the Fire Act grant, but I wanted to just put an additional word out there, and it's great to have Captain Reese here tonight, and we told Mike that we were sorry that he couldn't be here tonight to get the praise. But if you'll recall, the odds of receiving that grant when we applied for it were very slim. There were 100 grants given in the country, in the United States, for fire stations, so we were one of those. So that's pretty phenomenal odds. A number of agencies, we believe, did not even try to put in an application for that grant because they just felt like the chance was too small to get that. So I think we certainly commend the fire department, Chief Pond, and the council for supporting our application for that grant. So I had to throw that in as well. We're very pleased. That concludes my update.
Okay, and that jogged my memory on something else, looking at Rick. We had members of the...
Sailed these two pieces of property.
Okay, and with that, we'll move to public comments. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes on topics that are not on our public hearing agenda. What? I'm sorry. Pacific Wildlife Care had a presentation. I'm sorry. I forgot. Okay, yes, come forward.
Okay, Danny Nicholson, who is the director of Pacific Wildlife Care, okay. And Jeanette,
and you're Tierney, Joan Carter.
In a minute.
Thank you. Okay.
Is home with a back injury, and Jeanette Tierney, who's the director of the board of directors, and she has had a long-standing several-day flu. So I am the third string here. My name is Joan Carter. I've been a volunteer there for 2.5 years, and so I'm giving their presentation.
Okay.
25 years this Pacific Wildlife has been in effect in the community. People that had their own flyways and cages in the backyards, and they did what they could do. 2.5 years ago, the center opened. It's up behind the power plant. And in the 2.5 years, we just made incredible progress. I've been there for most of that time as a volunteer. In 07, we had 1,100 small mammals and birds that came through there. In 08, we had 1,600. And so far in 09, we've had 1,300. So there's a huge population of injured and orphan animals that come through there. It's a much stronger structure now as the organization has grown, and training and outreach in this 2.5 years has greatly increased. We have 1,000 hours of volunteer service per month. That's just at the center. That's not the people that do the hotline or the transportation or do office work or work on the board and that sort of thing. And it's open 365 days, 8 to 6, year-round. We're very proud to have been this successful, to have had the advantages that we've had there. We're a membership organization. There's no government banking. It's all volunteer money. We get some grants to build flyways and pools and project-driven money, but we just have to get by on volunteers. We always need more money and more members. Our outreach program is a very important aspect. And this last year, we've given 120 presentations in this county to schools and festivals and various organizations, mostly with the live educational animals. When we go out for a rescue, it's a very dramatic emotional time. People really want those wildlife to be rescued, and they stay around and they cry and they get very upset, and they really watch and see what's going to happen. I've been out on several of them, and it's amazing how reactive people get when they see an injured animal. So the public cares, and they want us there to help. You know, Morro Bay really loves its wildlife, and we just have to realize that we're all there to teach and educate and reach out to have this happen. It's the only group in the county that's doing this. I have some slides that I wanted to show you on entanglement. There's our gull saying that Morro Bay is a national estuary. That is our rehab center. We have a big flyway and smaller flyways. They contain the raptors and the animals and then the small birds. This is the fish cleaning over at the park where a lot of the pelicans get into trouble eating the fish. They're attracted to that, and then they get tangled up. This is one of the signs, the smaller sign there with the round gull there. Morro Bay has been really very cooperative and has put up these signs all around town at every place where you would find fishing. This sign, it's hard to read it, but the one below says it is hazardous to feed wildlife. It's hazardous to animals and to you. This is another place where we have trouble with entanglements. It's the fish cleaning station down in the park. Click it forward. There's another sign up there at the end. It's a little dark. It's hard to see. But the signs all over town have been very helpful. The signs seem to really work. Here is another area where there's somebody out there fishing. And it's there are many spots around Morro Bay along the waterfront where people fish. Next. There's a sign that says, please do not feed the wildlife. It's hazardous to their health and to yours. This was put up by the Harbor Department. It's made a huge difference in the feeding of the animals, and the squirrels in particular, and the gulls. There's another one of the signs that's at a spot in Morro Bay near the pier. Next one. Another sign at the T Pier. Next one. Verges has been very cooperative. They have our brochures in the front, and they recognize, you can see it has the whole fishing line and sinker, everything, hook in its mouth. Here's a pelican that's over his friend, pelican, who didn't make it. Fishing wire. Next. This guy also, you can see the wire tangled up to the left of his head. In the bush there, and there, that's going through the wires, fishing line up on the wires. The next one. We pulled this out of one pelican's pouch. It was all tangled up. His foot was attached to his beak with that hook. This pelican had fish hooks all through his body. The arrows are where there was an additional hook, so that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 right there. Next. That's an x-ray of how many were internally in that pelican. This pelican did not make it. He had to be euthanized. There was just too much work to be done. And there is Danny, our director, pulling one out of this pelican's pouch. You can see that bloody spot. There's another sight that we often see. And so this is just another example. We have last year we had like 150 pelicans, and one third of them had fishing wire tangled up. This year it's been better, but it's not the end of the year yet, and so we have been unable to really figure out exactly how many pelicans we've had, but it does look better. So the signage does help. You know, when we have a pelican in, it costs between $250 and $500 to rehab that pelican. If they have to go to the vet, if they're on antibiotics, if they have other interventions, and then the fish that they eat, which we buy at Giovanni's and support locally, it can come up to $500 per pelican. You know, the injuries of line and hooks is terrible for wildlife, and many suffer greatly, and many die over it. So I'm just pointing this out as we are making our efforts. We have people that go out to the piers and talk to the fishermen, and actually they have been extremely cooperative and very helpful, and we ask them to please look and see if they see any line laying around. Will they pick it up? Will they help us out? We have people through the whole county. Each pier has 2 to 3 volunteers that go out and talk to the fishermen about just being more careful. And I think it's made a huge difference. We have at least a real good rapport and people that have a sense of community. They want to help out, and they don't want to see this kind of damage occur. So we're asking you to help us also as we continue our efforts. It takes all of us to educate others about preventing injuries and illness in wildlife, and we need more volunteers, more members, more money, which you hear from every organization. But this is in Morro Bay, and we love our wildlife here. People come from everywhere to observe them, and they want to see us protecting and caring for them. And so the city of Morro Bay, we want to thank you very much for putting up those signs, and to the Harbor Department for putting up those please don't feed the animal signs. And we just appreciate that your cooperation, and we just want to keep you updated on what we're trying to do. So thank you. I have some magnets I want to give to all the city council.
Thank you. I think we have one more comment coming up.
I just wanted to add to what Joan said. Everything was right on. And I've been a volunteer since 1983.
We need your name, Kelly.
Kelly Vandenhoevel.
Thank you.
Since 1983. And we appreciate being here and your support. And we do need funds. We are the only wildlife organization that does rehab for wildlife in this county. So we're it, and we need all the help we can get. But thank you for everything.
Thank you, and I'm so sorry that I forgot. Anyway,
you're here. I'm really glad. I also want to say what a wonderful educational group this is. They do talk about this throughout the community. They're a part of the Bird Festival every year. Just a wonderful organization, and certainly something that if you have the time, would be great to be involved in. So,
and we love doing talks at schools, or if anybody has a program, kids that they would like us to come out to, we'll come out and do it.
So yes, absolutely.
We'd love to educate.
It's well worth it. Fascinating to see the real critters brought to you. So thank you so much. Yeah.
Before you go, could you announce your contact information one more time, please?
It's www.pacificwildlifecare.org or 543-WILD.
It's on your magnet.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Okay, with that, we will now start our public comments. Sorry, did you go to sleep, Keith?
Good evening, Mayor, Council, staff, and our community members at home. My name is Keith Taylor.
We chose this name because we feel it fits that this year will be the biggest and best festival ever, celebrating the whole entire Morro Bay. Our focus this year is to make this both an educational and celebratory event. The North T Pier expansion is something we're really proud of this year. It's adding a marine environmental education and outreach wing that is thanks to a grant from the National Estuary Program. And we've combined that with activities on the South Pier to educate our visitors on the health and uses of our bay. Love to have those last people out there, but we haven't gotten a hold of them. Another big thing that we're doing this year is we're going green for the first year. We have, this is also through the grant with the National Estuary Program, we have an active recycling and composting program. We've told all our vendors to leave their styrofoam at home. We are supplying compostable plates for them to use for their food. We have biodegradable trash bags, and we will have people at a recycling sorting center. So, this year we won't be 100% zero waste, but next year we will. This year we have 85 out of our 140 vendors are new, have never been to Morro Bay before. We've had a lot of requests to bring in new things to see, to eat, to buy. We've been able to fulfill that. This year is our most ever. We are helping and raising funds for 33 separate nonprofit agencies throughout our community. Other things that are new and expanded this year is we have on Saturday only, a rock wall, climbing wall is going to be back. We have brought in the tall ship Amazing Grace, which will be at the North T Pier and is available free tours thanks to a sponsorship by 20 of our local businesses. We have a remotely operated underwater vehicle project that I'm really proud of, and this encourages education in marine technology for our youth. There's going to be a little pool. They can build their own ROVs and swim them around. Ships to Reef is going to be relocated on the North T Pier. It'll be right next to their first ecotourism project here from Morro Bay, the Restless Sea 2. We will have on Saturday a live air sea rescue demonstration, which is a combined agency effort with the Morro Bay Fire Department, the Harbor Patrol, and California Highway Patrol. We have discounted bay tours will be offered at the North T Pier with thanks to subsea tours. The kiddie train this year is free thanks to Morro Bay Furniture. It's picking up sponsors on that. We're going to be having sailboat races in the bay. We're bringing back major name acts this year with a headliner on Saturday is Canned Heat. Those of you my age and beyond can remember them. They're good. It'll be fun. Other big bands that will be playing this year locally are Steel Time, Mighty Croon Dog, Zongo All-Stars, and many more. There's 30 entertainment acts in total on three stages, including both the Los Osos and Morro Bay High School Choirs and the Morro Bay and Cuesta Jazz Ensembles. I'm out of time. Yeah. All the usual fun, the chatter contest, everything else is going to be new. We have some live animals, and the city trolleys and ride-on are free from several locations to all visitors in Morro Bay, whether they're going to the festival or not. We hope you go to the festival. Don't forget, kids are free, and tickets are available at Albertsons, the Chamber of Commerce, and the Morro Bay Harbor Festival office. Thank you very much. Great. I hope to see you all there.
Thank you. Hope we'll see everybody there. Anyone else?
How you doing? I'm Gary Hickson. How's the council doing? I live at 761 Butte Avenue, number 5, next to Morro Bay Coffee Company. And this is the second time I've done this. And I'm doing my own TV show for the city of Morro Bay at San Luis Obispo. I'm doing something called the Gary Tyler Moore Show. And I just wanted to say how great Morro Bay is doing, and Janice, like, the art in the park was the biggest I ever saw. We had a really good summer, and there's a lot going on in Morro Bay, and the sidewalks and the roundabout, I think they're getting better at coming through the roundabout. I want to say hello to everybody back there, and hello to Joseph Goodwin. And I live over by the roundabout, and Cindy Mailman complained a little bit about it ruining her business, but she's getting it back. And I also wanted to say that you can do your own television show for $50 a year. Last time I said it was $50 a month. And it's pretty difficult, though. The Rick Martel show's on there, and Peggy Penny's still there, and it, me, of course, and violating copyright with Gary Tyler Moore. And I'm doing fine, and somebody has a Haight-Ashbury sign. I don't know if you've noticed. There's a Haight-Ashbury sign on the corner of Morro Bay and Main. So it's creating a lot of hippie activity. So I'm going to wait for this thing to beep, so don't worry about it. And I see Janice all over the place. Also, Jim Brown, he's running for city council, and she knows who Jim Brown is. And I'm supposed to, but it's going to cost me $300 to get the flyers out. So I'm going on television right now because I have to get used to it, since I'm – and my program's going to be out in a few days on Channel 2. I think it's called The Gary Hickson Show or The Robin Newport Files. And it's going to be pretty good. And I'm also joining the San Francisco
– Is this on our public hearing topic?
No.
It's not. Okay. All right. No. It sounded like it was. Thanks.
On the 17th, I filed a complaint with the State Water Resources Control Board for noncompliance against the city for Decision 1633. In 95, Morro Bay got a decision to get appropriate water outside the city limits, and they had 2 years to comply with flow meters within the creek. And so that gave it to 97 until the state water came into town. Since then, the flow meters have never came in. That's 12 years that Morro Bay has not put the flow meters in the creek. And it was done by a biologist that said that for the betterment of the creek and the public good, that there had to be 1.4 CFS coming down the creek for the betterment of the fish and the public good. Morro Bay continues to pump out there. I know the Ashers field is shut down because it's dry, and for other reasons. But as far as 11A that sits up there, it still pumps, and it pumps today. I sit here, and it's perplexing to me to see we talk about the Pacific Care and the Nature Conservancy and all that, and with no regard to the endangered species that are out there, whether it's threatened or not, whether it's the red-legged frog or the steelhead. All I ask is that the city complies with the measure, with Decision 1633. For what reason they don't, I have no clue. But it would seem like it would be in their best interest to comply with a decision that they worked hard to get the appropriated water out there, but if the only thing you've ever done as a city is pump the water. No records, actually 4 years of records, but three of them were filed in 1 year. So as a landowner out there, all we ask for is comply with the ruling. That's all we ask. So that's about all I have to say.
Thank you. Anyone else for public comment? This is not on public hearing items.
Hi, Jack McCurdy from Morro Bay. I want to comment about the draft letter in your packet regarding a once-through cooling regulations policy that's now before the State Water Board. I want to emphasize that this policy, this once-through cooling policy, is not about some obscure statute that we'll never, ever feel the consequences of. It's about a policy that will affect Morro Bay directly, about our estuary, its health, its future, and which all our property values, our businesses, our tourism, our whole community depends on. So it couldn't be more important. It is deeply flawed, as your letter outlines, and it will only cause disputes and litigation because it is so vague in its language. The opposition is united, environmental groups from across the state. But I think it's very, very important to have local governments weigh in on this issue. The comments that are in your packet are very commendable. They're very appropriate points. To summarize, the one paragraph says, the city does have grave concerns that the draft policy often appears to be vague and unclear, allowing opportunities for power plant owners to exercise options made available in the draft policy to delay and avoid achieving the board's stated goal of protecting the state's coastal and estuarine waters. CAPE will submit its own comments or detail, but frankly, I don't think they'll surpass the case made in your draft letter for revising this policy before it is adopted. I want to make just one other comment. As many of you may know, Joe Giannini died a week ago, one of our greatest community leaders, at the age of 94. His family and friends like me are heartbroken, and I have written a memorial to Joe, which will appear in the slowcoastjournal.com starting Thursday, and I hope you will all check it out. It was one of the most gratifying articles I've ever written. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else for public comment?
Hi, my name is Tammy Haas, and I'm the co-community leader for the Morro Bay 4-H with Ann Lamone, who's here tonight. I'm here to announce that October 4th through 10th is National 4-H Week. Our club meets the first Tuesday of the month at the Morro Grange Hall out on Highway 41. 4-H is a youth organization that is run through the UC system of California. 4-H is open to youth 5 to 19 years old.
Okay, we just have two quick items on our consent agenda, so we're going to run through those real quickly. Did anyone want to pull either A1 or A3?
I'd like to pull A1, and I'll move approval of A2 and A3.
We already did A2, so just A3.
Oh, that's right. Excuse me. A3.
All right. Second. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second from Carla. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, Betty, A1.
I just want to announce to the public what A1 is, and it's a resolution approving the form and authorization to sell our rights to $300,000 that the state owes us to a joint organization of county and cities that will buy our $300,000 and give it back to us so we can have our money this year in light of the state budget that the governor was taking millions and billions of dollars, actually billions of dollars from cities and counties. And so it's a way that the cities have come together to figure out how to retain some of our money that's being taken by the state.
And I did have a follow-up question to the council. With this legislation that's proposed and the whole securitization process, the Senate Bill 67 seems to be what we're dependent on passing. That's the cleanup bill to clarify the terms of the securitization and allow us to participate in this program. I haven't received the latest update on its passage or not, but at the APCDE board, we did vote to send a letter of support of SB 67 and our intent to participate. I was wondering if we wanted to do the same.
If it's not too late, Madam Mayor, maybe you or city manager could do that, since I would assume that it's a League of Cities supported bill and we can do those automatically.
Can we go ahead and do that?
Can we go ahead and do that tonight, Rob? Okay. Is the council in agreement with that, sending a letter of support?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you need a motion, or is consensus sufficient?
It'd be great to have a motion.
Okay. Noah, why don't you make a motion?
Sure. I move that we approve Resolution 4909 and submit a letter of support of Senate Bill 67, declaring our intent to participate with the program and our thankfulness for the ability to retain those funds in a short-term manner.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. There we are. And we will start now our public hearings. And first up, only up, is policy discussion on water services outside of the city limits. And Dylan Wade is going to be giving this presentation.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council, and members of the public. I think I'm safe in saying there's almost no place I'd rather not be than here right now having this discussion. What's before you tonight is a policy discussion on providing water services outside of the city limits. What we're not going to be covering tonight are all of the issues in the Chorro Groundwater Basin. There are a number of other issues in that basin that we'll have plenty of time in the future to discuss. The comment earlier about 1633 would be one of those items. Water quality degradation is something that in the future we'll go into in more detail. Tonight, really, I want to keep it focused and on the policy discussion. So with that, I'll give a presentation. I think the staff report covers it fairly well. What I'm not going to do in the presentation is go into detail about each of the individual water user accounts. I didn't feel that that was really something that we needed to highlight. But do be aware that that information is there for your use. So Morro Bay's water supply. In the city of Morro Bay, there are four main sources. And then just a real quick recap of what those sources are and what they can do. The State Water Project can supply about 75% of our peak monthly demand. The desalinization plant, and you'll see that up on here, can provide approximately 36% of monthly peak demands when it's running. The Morro Groundwater Basin can provide about 48% of that peak demand if it's routed directly into the system, but currently, because of nitrate contamination, we have to run it through reverse osmosis, and we actually lose some water in that process. And then lastly, we have the Chorro Groundwater Basin, which actually is our largest source of supply apart from the State Water Project. And that basin can provide, on a peak monthly basis, 128% of our water. So here it is graphically. If this is the total pie, our total water supply for an average year, last couple years, 2006 to 2008, the Chorro Basin provided about 14%, the Morro Basin about 4%, and then about 1% from the desalinization plant. Looking into the future, if we look at our policy document, San Luis Obispo that way, and then Chorro Creek Road, basically straight towards the ocean. What we show here, this is just a schematic diagram showing kind of where everything's headed. So we have a line that runs down Quintana Road. That line runs all the way out to Kinney Road. And then on the other side, it runs all the way into the city of Morro Bay to the King's Tank site. That line is the Chorro Valley pumping line. Off of that line, we have two lines. One of those lines is a pumping line that basically picks up water from the well fields on Chorro Creek Road, which I call the Ashurst well field, and blends with water in the Romero pumping line, or the well field that's out by 11A, in that pumping line. So those two sources blend at this location. And then there's another line there upstream of the blending point that feeds water back to the customers along Chorro Creek Road. So there are three basic modes of operation for the city in this vicinity. The first mode of operation is when we're running the water from the Romero well field. Water comes down this line from Kinney Road, feeds the customers down this road, pressurizes this header, but it doesn't go anywhere, and then runs all the way up Quintana Road, all the way into Morro Bay, into the King's Tank. Under those conditions, customers in the Chorro Valley are receiving 100% water from well 11A. And well 11A has fairly good water quality. Another mode of operation that has happened in the past is that we're running both the Ashurst and the Romero well field. So we're running an additional well beyond well 11A. What happens in that scenario is water comes into this pipeline to this point, and then it blends with water coming in this pipeline from the city's wells in the Ashurst well field. So this is our blending point. The blended water then runs from here all the way into the city to the King's Tanks complex. And then there's a third mode of operation that most commonly occurs in this line is when we're not running any of the wells. When we're not running any of the wells, water backfeeds out of the King's Tanks and actually runs down these pipelines and runs all the way back out to Kinnear Road. So there's three different modes of operation for this system. One when we're running one well, one when we're running more than one well, and then also when we're not running any wells. There are constraints, though, on the usage of the wells in the Chorro Basin, and that would be both the Ashurst and the Romero well fields. One of the constraints that we have is water quantity. There's just a finite amount of water. We haven't had problems with these wells going dry. We haven't had any experiences with that. The groundwater levels are still pretty high, so that we're not going to talk about that much this evening. Another constraint that we have is timing of extractions, and that was alluded to earlier in this evening, that there are constraints on when we can and can't operate those wells. The third issue is that basically the basin has had deteriorating water quality due to largely nitrate contamination. But this basin, because of the nature of the aquifer and the wells in this basin, is also subject to and has the potential for periodic bacteriological events. And so that's another form of contamination that we have to be concerned about marching ahead. And then there's a fourth constraint, is that the regulations governing the usage of the water in this basin are changing. So here's where we're at. We're at a water supply crossroads. And I kind of picked this diagram. The water quality in the basin is decreasing. The state and federal regulations governing water quality are increasing. And over time, as the city builds out, we'll have a greater and greater demand on this water quality basin. So it puts us in an interesting position. I like to say I'm right here. And think of it like three converging trains. That you go, there's a number of issues that are historic practice in the basin probably can't continue into the future. And so what I've presented tonight in the staff report, and then I'll run through very quickly here, are what are some of our options? Knowing that we can't do what we've historically done out there, what can we do? What's a realistic option? What's available to us? And there are iterations on these themes. I didn't go into great detail. I haven't done all of the research necessary to develop these projects completely. But what we have done is give you sort of an order of magnitude estimate of what these projects are and what they would look like so that you guys can make some decisions based on that. So the first option that we looked at was, what if we built a water treatment plant in the Ashurst well field? Another option that we looked at is, what if we put in a potable distribution line all the way out to Kinnear Road? Another option we looked at is, what if we got into non-potable water agreements? And then the fourth option is to disconnect customers outside of the city limits. So here's what the different options look like. The treatment alternative basically consists of building a treatment plant in the Ashurst well field. The city owns a 5-acre parcel there. It happens to be in a floodplain, so it may not be the best location for a treatment plant, but assuming we could get it permitted. Some of the cons of this project, though, is it's got a high capital cost. We would need staff that could only use that facility. That facility can only be used certain periods of the year, and we would need staff for that facility. We don't have enough staff available right now to run that facility and our other facility in the Morro Basin. It would be difficult to permit. So one of the other options, what else could we do? One of the options is that you would extend a pipeline all the way out to provide potable water so that they would get the same blend of water that everybody within Morro Bay gets. This is probably our highest capital cost option, although reoccurring costs are not very high for this, so we wouldn't have to add staff for this option. But what this would do is basically make sure that everybody within or without the city limits would receive the same water and the same water quality. Some of the cons of that, so that's the primary benefit. Some of the bad things about that, it has a fairly high capital cost. It would take some time to get this project permitted, and there's always risk when you're putting in a pipeline. I mean, if you try to share an easement with existing pipelines, they can get crowded. If you try to acquire new easements, you have real property risk. So those are some of the cons of that alternative. Another option is what I would call, and what would become of the city of Morro Bay if we decided, well, we're going to continue sort of business as usual, and that's what this option would be. What it would require us to do, our system would become a dual system. What that means for the state is that you go, we have potable and non-potable water in the same pipelines and the same pipe network. Doing that, the largest probably con against doing that, first of all, it doesn't change anything. So we still are providing water that doesn't meet all the water quality standards at all times, potentially. Also, though, it increases the complexity of our system. And so once we're rated as having a dual system, now we need to hire a higher level of operators than we currently have. So right now we employ D3 operators. We'd have to make the jump to D4 system operators. In doing that, that jump, as you get into the D4 and the D5, those positions become more of like a professional position and less sort of a fields or hands-on position. So there's usually a fairly high salary increase associated with those steps. It changes the nature of the positions a little bit. So this would have some higher staffing costs and then also some risk that we currently have that we're trying to get out of. So this is the last option that staff looked at. And basically what this does is that it would disconnect. We would negotiate our way out of agreements with the customers in the Chorro Valley. The pumping line then would serve just the purpose of being a pumping line. It wouldn't be sort of this hybrid line where part of the time it's a distribution line, part of the time it's a pumping line. What this would allow us to do is we would have more freedom in operating the Ashurst wells because our blend would occur at the tank site rather than at that location on Chorro Creek Road. Some of the cons of this, probably the biggest one and the one that I'm sure you'll hear the most about here in a few minutes when you take public comment, is that there are people that this impacts. Most of those people are here tonight, and I thank them for being here. And you'll get to hear from them. And so you go, there are impacts, and we're certainly aware of that, and don't look at that as a positive, but there are impacts to the people outside of the city limits of Morro Bay. And then also, it would be remiss for us to say that getting out of all these agreements is going to be smooth and easy. And you go, so there could be costs in that process as well. So with that, I'll kind of jump back to my staff report and then take any questions that you have. Really what we're here and staff's recommending tonight is that the City Council review their policy. The way that the municipal code reads is that you go, the City Council will furnish water service in accordance with the regulations in the code, and then also to property within the city limits and to such areas outside the city limits as the council may designate. And so we're asking you tonight to review that policy and to direct staff onto which of these four alternatives to pursue, but the recommendation from staff is that you direct us to get out of the business of providing water outside of our city limits. So we're actually asking you for permission to begin negotiations with the property owners. We're asking for permission to let us negotiate with the property owners to remove connections outside of the city limits. And that's a recommendation of staff for this evening. So at this point, I'd be happy to take any questions from the council.
Okay, questions for staff?
Yeah, I'd like to lead off because I think it's an important topic. It's hard to separate the different elements of this really. It's a complex situation, and we have talked back and forth about some of the details here that affect our long-term chances of these wells and the quality of these wells, our relationship with the community out there. And it's really about the process tonight and how we would be
against us, as was reported by one of the speakers. I'm not sure where that will head. That could certainly also head with a cease and desist order. I have no, you know, I don't know exactly what the future holds with regards to our uses in the Chorro Valley. We've already been under order to cease using some of those wells already. So, but we will be having entirely, I consider them different conversations on 1633. This is the big policy decision on whether you want to continue to provide water outside our city limits, outside our sphere, because our sphere was even removed. That might have been one of the reasons why we provided water outside the city limits, because it was still in our sphere. We no longer even have a sphere of influence because that was taken away by LAFCO. So it's more the policy issue whether you want to or not. And then as Dylan says, if the policy is to continue to provide the water, then we have to use one of these other alternatives that he says to be able to continue to provide the water and meet state standards. If you do not want to continue to provide water outside the city limits, then we will begin with each property owner to discuss alternatives and negotiate in which each. Some of these are much more complex, the properties, than other ones, and we'd bring back solutions to each and every one of them for your direction also.
Okay, so just to confirm then, as we move into the other elements of this discussion, the order 1633 and the whole Churro Creek flow discussion and our engagement with our well field out there, that the process would include some closed session discussions with the council and ultimately then another open session presentation. And would we have the same sort of outreach that we've had so far with the stakeholders?
Absolutely.
For that process?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Any other questions for staff?
I have a couple.
Okay.
Mr. Wade, you mentioned that there was a place where the two well fields get blended, but would you just confirm that we're currently not using one of the well fields? Is that true?
That's correct.
Okay. And then...
That's correct.
Thank you. And the question about the groundwater levels, I think will probably be raised tonight. Us pumping the wells, giving them water versus them doing their own, do you have a feel for how that will impact the water level out there?
Let me make sure I understand the question before I answer it. The concern is, let's say we stop providing water out there, and all of the groundwater basin users that have a well begin using those wells. What impact will that have on the groundwater level? It's not very easy to answer that question. You go, our well field is capable of producing significantly greater quantities than the individual well users when you're talking about a residential application. There are some sort of agricultural applications upstream of us that can produce large quantities of water using their wells. So you go, it's not a linear influence, it's not a linear equation as far as how much does their pumping impact the groundwater basin. I wish I could give you a great answer, but it really isn't that straightforward.
Okay.
I did have one quick other question. It's just to confirm, as we move into the conversation about reclamation with the sewage treatment plants, this policy, if we were to go forward with a removal of water supply outside of city limits, how would this policy interact with an ag exchange potential?
I don't think that it would impact it at all. You go, when we get to the point where we're developing a mature water reclamation program, we don't have an ordinance for that yet. You go, as we get to that point, there are some legal milestones that we're going to have to overcome in regards to becoming a reclaimed water provider. As we move towards that direction, we're going to have those discussions. But I don't think that anything that we're doing here tonight would preclude us from taking any selected course of action in that regard.
Okay, any other questions? All right, just a comment for the public before we start the public comment, just so it's clear, most of these users are paying for the water. They're not getting it for free. They've been paying for it. So that's a point that I just want clear to the public that may be watching. And the other thing that I want all of you to know before you make your comments is that we're looking for ways to do this right. I mean, it's not a situation that any one of us is happy about. So anything that you can say in your comments that would be helpful as to good ideas as to how we can work this out, we'd very much appreciate. All right, and with that, we'll open it for public comment. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. And unfortunately, the one on the podium is not working tonight, so you have to watch Bridget's little timer there. And when you see yellow, you know you need to wrap up your comments, and when it turns red, you need to stop. Okay? So with that, please begin. Anybody?
Fabulous. Negatively. It's assumed that we have wells. This may or may not be true. I'm not sure. It'll take money to link the wells to our houses, require a storage tank, plumbing, probably $10,000, I would think, as a minimum. New wells, very expensive. And presumably our set wells suffer the same pollution problems as the cities. The city seems to have set a precedent to supply water. In effect, the city has annexed Choro Valley with respect to the water supply. We paid our bills for the water, which has established a contract with the city. City has said the water is polluted. This has been there for some time. Its increased concentration appears to have led to the situation. I'm led to understand most of the time our water in Choro Valley comes after treatment by the city, and only some occasions is it fed from the well. The letter from Bruce Amboy states that supplying water to Choro Valley impacts the supply to Morro Bay, but our small consumption can only have a small impact. The staff report of Dylan Wade, alternate 4, covers disconnecting customers. It appears the city will need a purification plant prior to introducing water to King's tanks to meet the standards. So presumably that could be prior to supplying us. I think that everyone went over all the different items and ways that arguments for and against this. So that's about it. Your consideration on my comments.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, good evening. I'm Bill Martini. And I know I've been talking about water and the different farmers up the different valleys. And again, I just want to reiterate that this could be a slippery slope because these people have superior water rights to the city. Should you cut off their water, number one, I believe those were done on prior agreements for easements across their property on well fields. There are various agreements that were made. Some of the agreements supposedly no longer exist, but they were made in good faith at the time. You do have health and safety issues. I know talking to Vera Pierce, I think some of them don't even have wells. The water's been supplying them forever. So I think as far as talking about the water supply, it's only 11 customers. I was under the understanding that there was no reverse supply of water from the city out to these property owners. Apparently there is from the King's tank when the water is not being pumped in one direction. There is a means of supplying potable water to these people. So at the last council meeting, I believe I heard it was $2 million to get a potable water line out there. I'm not so sure that's the case. But indeed, I would think very, very seriously on cutting off these few customers on the water that I think the repercussions could be pretty... Well, the potential is there because of the superior water rights of the farmers up the Choro and also the Morro Valley. And then again, we get back to the recycling of the water. If water is such a critical issue, and it's going to be in the sewer plant on the upgrade, I just thought I'd mention for you and the general public that the water coming in the Choro Valley wells is recycled water from the Men's Colony sewer plant, which you may not want to hear, but that's exactly what is recharging that basin. And so, again, just a pitch for recycling water in Morro Bay in the future. And I did have a conversation with the Farm Bureau. They're all behind Morro Bay recycling their water, which I'm getting slightly off the subject. But just to keep that in mind as far as water rights, cities is appropriative rights. I keep on hammering that because the farmers and the riparian rights are superior. So it's a slippery slope. And for to cut off 11 people off Morro Bay's water supply, it's just something to really keep in mind. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
I'm Millie Benson. I live on Canay Road. I'm the only Canay who has built out there and lives out there, the last one, except for that. We spend our money in Morro Bay. We are responsible for a lot of things that go on in Morro Bay, and we love this area. I think you need to think about us in Choro Valley. We love the Choro Valley area, and we like to keep it the way it is. And I think you have some responsibility to us. Thanks.
Thank you.
name's Mike Burton. I'm a property owner out of Chorro Creek. And I'd just like to say again what Bill Martoni had said, that I believe the property owners have riparian rights out there to the water there underneath us first before the city does. Second of all, it's my understanding with 1633 that no matter what the city of Morro Bay does, they have to put in some sort of a treatment plant there. I don't think you can just pump the wells and blend it at the tank. I may be wrong, but that's my understanding of that order from the state. So that's kind of, in my head, maybe something that needs to be touched on a little bit more other than that's just one option. I believe that is quite a big option. And maybe looking into a little bit more of the contamination issues of what causes the problems out there in that well field. If that is 128% of the city's water capabilities, I would think you guys would look a little harder into maybe what's causing problems in that well field.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm not one of the property owners there, but I am one of the residents.
Can we get your name, please, first?
Oh, my name is Sky Young.
Thank you.
I live right next to the Romero well and listen to it when it's running. They actually had to build a little building around it so that we can sleep when it runs. It's a little disturbing to think that we would continue to listen to that and have you drive down our driveway to access your well, destroying our asphalt, replacing it with gravel, and not provide us with water. There is very little area on our property to put a well. I would think that some kind of smaller processing plant, perhaps on the property where the well is, so that they could provide water downline from there to the existing customers. As few customers as there is, why would it take a multi-million dollar project to supply enough water, potable water for us? I don't understand some of those issues and why they couldn't put something right there at the Romero well that would supply people on that end. Maybe they could do some studying in that area.
Thank you.
My name is Carrie Burton, and I live 459 Chorro Valley Road. I have read 1633 till I'm blue in the face, and 1633 happened because of overpumping of the wells and people's wells out there going dry, the steelhead habitat, the creek drying up, dead fish everywhere, seawater intrusion, septic intrusion. So 1633 really needs to be read. There was huge environmental damage because of the overpumping. Now, I'm not a rocket scientist, but I'm thinking if you take our water and we all start pumping and we have first rights, which means you can't tell us how much we can pump, and all of us are pumping and using and growing and do whatever we want, and you guys come in there and start pumping, things are going to start happening again, and you're going to have maybe 1634. I don't know. You're going to have another decision. Honestly, Johnny Jones and I have sat scratching our heads trying to make sense of all this. And it's very, very frustrating. I was under the impression that we got state water because if we were on state water, that would lighten up the load for you guys to supplement the city. That was my assumption. I haven't actually read that, but it does kind of make sense. Also, again, the stream flow has to be at a certain level in order for you guys to pump. It's dusty dry. But the wells have been pumped. They've been tested. They've been used. Even though 1633 has not been complied with, which means it's been violated and these wells have been used and overpumped. So I don't know what the damages are to our property then. I don't know what's been pulled in as far as septic or seawater intrusion, but I just think it's very, very, I mean, it's hard for me to fathom that you guys would actually now threaten to take our water when you've been not complying with 1633 and continuing to pump. And now what are the damages to our property? Now on top of that, you say you're going to take the state water. It absolutely does not make any sense to me. And again, I was happy to find out that we do have riparian rights, which means we have first rights to that water over the city. All of us do. So we're not going to be left high and dry. We will use that water. So I really hope you look into it and work with us. And the easy solution is, hey.
Well, at that time they said, do away with your well. because we'll supply you with the water. I've been there for 34 years, and they've been supplying me with water. I just hate to see it turned off now at this stage of my life. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Dustin Lamone. I am a member of the Morro Bay 4-H. Our club is a farm on Joro Creek Road. We are one of the only clubs in the county that can offer a place for kids to raise project animals if they live in town. When my older brother started 4-H, we lived in town, and he raised his pig at the 4-H farm. He would not have been able to have a project animal in a safe place if that farm weren't available. I have friends who live in town now and are able to do a livestock project and learn about large animals because of this farm. If we don't have water there, I don't know what we'll do. The animals need water to drink, and we use the water to wash them and keep the pens and tools clean. We have started a garden project at the farm, too, and we'll need water to grow our plants. I hope you will consider that if you take the water away, it will be really hard for our 4-H members to have healthy animals and plants on our farm. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay.
My name is Tammy Haas, and I'm also with the Morro Bay 4-H Club. Our club leases 2 acres on Choro Creek Road from PG&E, and they have for over 30 years. Like Dustin said, it allows the youth in our community to raise the livestock projects, and with raising livestock projects, it's lifelong skills of responsibility, rewards that carry over until their adult lives. We're very dependent on city water because we do not have a well. The water that we use at our farm is used for gardening and for livestock projects only. And we just wondered if there was any suggestions or ideas that you might have for us.
Thank you. Thank you. Hi. I'm Barbara Dorr, 340 Arcadia, and I thought your remarks were rather facetious when you came up tonight about the last place you wanted to be was giving this information tonight. It's a terrible situation for all of you and all of us. It seems that it's definitely a monetary decision. That's the hard part. If we in Morro Bay have to spend $1 million, we're talking transient occupancy tax, special assessment, parcel assessment taxes, and many things, because Morro Bay does not have the money to pay for critical services. If we have to put $1 million into this, that's a lot of money. I would be the last person to say you shouldn't all get water, but there have to be other things that can be looked at. I mean, you said they're no longer in Morro Bay's sphere of influence. Possibly that can be changed. Possibly you can look for a way to annex the properties, then those property taxes would also benefit the city of Morro Bay. I won't even mention benefit assessment. And if you did declare the well that's not being used as surplus and negotiated drilling wells for all of these people, if that was cheaper than the $1 million, and many, many decades ago, lived in Illinois and Michigan, and they are very small parcels, have both septic systems and wells. So a well is not an impact on your property at all. It's just the depth that you have to go. But it might be cheaper to put in the wells and negotiate that way than to spend the $1 million. Thank you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name's Edward Pierce. I'm the son of Vera Pierce. And as far as I hate to say it or even think that our city council is made up of what an old saying is called forked tongues. But it's like making an agreement with someone, and then things change down the road, and now the agreement's no good.
Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. Had some questions raised during those comments. Did you keep a list of them, or you want me to run down the ones that I've gotten?
Yeah, if you guys want to ask questions, that would probably be the best.
Okay, there's a question about riparian rights. I don't know if that's Rob or you.
Mayor Peters?
Yes.
Could we start with the notification? My understanding was that the city attorney contacted all these property owners originally way back, and could we start with that, possibly?
Okay. I'll answer that.
Okay.
We've met with the majority of these property owners over the course probably starting in April of this last year. At the time that we started those discussions, we really were just on a fact-finding mission. We brought everybody in. We were trying to find what agreements there were or were not out in the Chorro Valley, because we knew these discussions would be coming up. But at that time, we didn't indicate that we were changing anything. We didn't bring this hearing up. Most of these people got notice of this hearing last week via certified letter. That's how they found out.
Okay. All right, riparian rights, Rob, how does that work?
You start it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll touch that too, and then if I mess it up, Rob can speak to that. It is correct that the way that groundwater works in California is that the owner of a property has the right to pump up and use as much water as they can. That's basically their right in California. That's a riparian right. The city also has riparian rights out there. We could water our 1 acre or 5 acre parcel under that riparian right. There are riparian rights that enable people to use the wells. Those rights are superior to the type of right or permit that the city has, which is an appropriative right. Appropriation means that you're taking something from one place and using it somewhere else. And that's effectively what our right is that it gives us permission to take water from that well field and to use it beneficially within the city limits of Morro Bay. We are taking water from that groundwater basin and using it in Morro Bay, thereby appropriating that water. So the riparian rights, or the rights of the users, are first and foremost to our right, which is a secondary right, which is an appropriative right. If our pumping was found to be detrimental to them, if our pumping was shown to cause damage to their well field, then we could be forced to stop that pumping. We could be forced to compensate for any damage that we caused. That is correct. However, I don't have any reason to believe that our operations are causing or have caused damage in that location.
I would add, as far as our appropriation rights too, we have not come close since having state water of coming even remotely close to what of our appropriation rights that are allowed out there. I think it's important too to kind of frame the issue is we're not asking for anything tonight to say that we're disconnecting these customers tomorrow. What we're asking for is this policy direction. Staff came up with these four different ideas, and before we embarked and even trying to go down the path of looking at each one of these properties and negotiating and looking at the different properties, we needed to come to you for a policy decision if that's something you want to pursue. Each individual property is a different property. Some of these have agreements that have termination clauses in them that specifically state that they can be terminated. Other ones don't. I guess I'll mention the Benson and the Pappin. Those are very unique. Those are very small lots with easements that we need that have to be negotiated separately and apart than from someone who's not might not be even here tonight, has an own well that might be using it, but also might have our water. So each one is an individual situation, and we're just asking for that direction on whether you want us to negotiate alternative water sources besides city water with these individual property owners. But we're not here tonight asking you to tell us to disconnect them in 30, 60, 90, 120 days. We have to look at each one of these individually and how they will be affected and how the city would be affected to each one.
Okay, and another question was, if there is a pipeline where we have been supplying state water to them, why can we not continue to do that?
Sure, I'll take that one.
Could I make a comment?
No, I'm sorry. It's our turn now. Thank you. We'll try and get all the questions that you raised.
And this is the subtle point, and you go, a lot of people touched on this. You go, our water usage out here is small. And you go, I think that's, you know, I don't want to get into subjective, small, large water usage. For the most part, their total usage is insignificant compared to the rest of the city of Morro Bay. It's not the drawing, it's not the fact that they're using some small amount of water. It's not the quantity of water that they're taking. So we're not having a quantity discussion. What it is, it's the quality of water. And the question in my mind centers around the fact that you go, and so you go, I only have one pipe out there. And when I run those wells and pump those wells, which we need to do to provide a sufficient quantity of water to Morro Bay, the water that we pump is the water that's delivered to these people. And so you go, they get unfiltered well water. It's disinfected with chlorine, but it doesn't receive any treatment other than that. And so you go, that's the issue that we have. It's not the quantity of water that they're taking. It's the quality impacts and the ability to blend water. So that's why I had this up tonight, is that you go, this is our blending point. The water quality in the Romero well field has held better than the water quality in the Ashurst well field. It's upstream of some large agriculture operations that existed. And so you go, there's less nitrates in it. What we found is the Ashurst well field, we've seen very high nitrates. The safe drinking water limit is about 45, and we've seen levels as high as 110 or so in that well field, that lower well field. And so last year, for example, when we operated this during the state water shutdown, we operated wells in the Ashurst well field. And then what we did was we ran a blend calculation on that water to basically make sure that the customers out there were receiving water that was safe to drink. And they did, but it was very close. And so if the water gets any worse in the Ashurst well field, we can't continue to do that. And so what we would have to do is either stop producing water from our well fields, which is what we've been directed to do by the state, until we can show them that there's a safe blending location. Or we have to come up with some alternative to treat that water so that it's safe to drink at the well fields.
And there aren't any treatment things that you can put on individual wells. It has to go to a common area?
That's another great question. As an individual property owner, they have treatment techniques and technologies available to them that as a public water supplier are illegal for me to use. So, for example, I cannot do in-home treatment. That's not a permitted, allowable, or legal treatment technique for me to use as a public water provider. However, it's very common for people who have their own wells to put treatment on their wells. So if their wells have whatever specific issue, they would put treatment on there for that. And that would be a legal and acceptable use of that well water and that treatment technology. But as a public water supplier, we're held to a higher standard. And because I can't be in all of those homes at all of times, day or night, to ensure that that water is safe to drink, we are not legally allowed to put in-home treatment technologies in place.
Even if we put those devices on our wells?
We could put treatment technologies on our wells to treat that. And so that was the first option that we reviewed tonight, which was the plant. In Romero, we would anticipate needing some form of disinfection largely as the current treatment technology. And then in Ashurst, we would need something more than disinfection because we have nitrates. So we would have to build a system that's very similar to the brackish system that we installed to deal with nitrates in the Morro groundwater basin. So it'd almost be a twin project to the Morro groundwater basin brackish treatment that we just installed. And that project will land somewhere around $1 million by the time we're done with it. And so I'm, you know, just rough estimating, saying, hey, it's going to be more flow in Choro. We may be able to blend some of it, but we are going to have to put in treatment out there. None of the infrastructure is in place to support that. We're going to have flood plain issues to deal with in the location where we would need the treatment. And so it would be a difficult and expensive process to go through that. If that's the direction that the council chooses to go, then you go, we'll take that sort of alternative, and we'll explore that and we'll develop it further and we'll come back with more refined cost estimates. But it is a significant in cost, and it also has some risks and some time costs associated with those types of alternatives.
Okay. Other questions? Betty?
Yes, I heard three other questions. One had to do with if we stop using or pumping out there, you have to move the purification from the intersection of Quintana and Choro. Is that true? Or how does that work?
Yeah, let me touch on that. The strategy that we're using for dealing with nitrates, we're trying not to build a treatment plant if we don't have to. And so what we're doing right now is we can blend that water. So if my blending point moves, if we get rid of the customers out there, my blending point moves from the intersection of Quintana Road and Charo Creek Road. It moves into the King's tank, where it blends with water from the desal, it blends with water from every other source, and it gives us a lot more options as far as how much water we can pump and what quality that water that we pump can be. So you go, if I'm blending bad Choro water with worse Choro water, my product isn't very good. But if I'm blending bad and worse Choro water with desal water that's great and water...
The cleaning of the water, does 1633 require, regardless of whether we cut off service or not, that we still have to put some kind of facility out there?
No, it does not.
Okay. And then I guess I would, my last question mark down here. It relates back to the 4-H. And I assume that we're not negotiating anything with PG&E where the 4-H is because they don't have a well, PG&E doesn't care. That becomes an issue between the 4-H and PG&E.
I'll echo what Rob said, is that you go, currently we have 12 customers out there. Mm-hmm. Each circumstance is unique. You go, about half of them have a well. There's probably five parcels that don't have wells, 4-H included in that group. And so you go, as we go through this process, and I think it's fair to say to you and then also to the people that are here tonight, that you go, we recognize that there are going to be ramifications from getting out of this service. We're going to have to negotiate. We're going to have to give them time to modify their facilities, to build new facilities, to take whatever course of action is agreeable. And so you go, I think what we're asking for really is just the ability to start those discussions.
But technically we don't have to deal with 4-H. That's a PG&E issue.
That's probably correct. But I don't think, from my perspective, you guys, as we move through this process, we'll negotiate with each one and come up with a correct solution.
I think to clarify, your question is, they're both parties. 4-H is using it, and if 4-H had a different agreement and PG&E said no, they didn't want to go along with that idea and don't want any, type of well or any other use of water on their property, then, of course, the property owner would prevail in that type of discussion. But I certainly believe that when we do meet, we've provided notice to 4-H here. We'll continue to discuss their issues, their concerns, and try to find out a solution. But I think PG&E is a property owner. Just as if a tenant is here, it's primarily the property owner that we have to figure out the solution with, not necessarily the tenant.
Rick, you got questions? Noah?
Yeah, I would like to ask a question just summarizing our contact, recent contact with some of the other stakeholders and regulators in the area, specifically the Water Board and the county and the National Estuary Program. What has our communication been so far with those other organizations that seem to really play a key role in the surveillance and management of this basin? And where are we with our communication, and where could we go with that to help this whole process?
We have a user group and a notification process for the Ashurst nitrate study, which has been the primary document and topic of concern for the Regional Water Quality Control Board, the NEP, and some of the others. And so you go, as we move through that process, we anticipate noticing, bringing those people along, and having sort of a collaborative process as we move through that. In regards to this, we actually only noticed, we noticed the property owners, and if the property owner didn't live at the property, we also sent a letter to the property just to try to make sure that everybody got it. But we did not involve the NEP, regional board, any of the others in this policy discussion.
Carla, questions?
No, but I'm just going to respond real quick to Betty's question about the 4-H. There are many options that we can do, Betty, in regards to that. The 4-H won't be left high and dry because we can bring in a water tank and other things to bring in water for the livestock. But the lease is run by the UC Regents, and they negotiate with PG&E, so it's kind of out of our hands, actually. But there are other options we can look at as far as providing water to the livestock. So.
Okay, Noah, you had another?
Yeah, I did have a follow-up question, actually. With the bigger conversation about water quality in the area, we did see some success with the Moro Valley as we looked at addressing the water quality issues and looking at some solutions for the big picture. Could you talk a little bit about what you see happening in the Chorro Valley to along the lines of action that could help us address the quality situation there?
This is a risky question to answer. Because actually, you guys will make that decision. Really, what we'll be doing in the coming weeks is bringing the Ashurst study to you in a public forum to adopt that as your policy document. What we did in Moro that was fairly successful, and I would anticipate kind of continuing that process in Chorro with your permission when we get to that point, is that we've worked through the regional board. And we've used the regional board's resources.
How big their property was. So those discussions happened in April and May and some in June.
Excuse me. We'll handle all that. Please trust us, okay? So just trust us to handle this the way we know how to do it, okay? Just wait. Go ahead, Carla.
Thank you. And that was in regards to what agreements they had with the city, if any, and...
Correct. We did not specifically discuss the issue policy decision of disconnecting water because we do.
Excuse me, sir. We'll have to ask you to leave if you keep interrupting. So if you want to stay here, please listen to the process. We will handle it, okay?
Because we had no policy direction from council to discuss that with them.
Okay.
If you give us policy discussion tonight on to do that, then we will meet again with the property owners to discuss that policy discussion.
Okay, thank you. All right, so to answer the concerns out there, no, those discussions did not deal with cutting off the water. Those were finding out the agreements. We were doing the research to find out what there was and what we could do and what was available. So we're just laying all the groundwork for what comes next, and we don't know yet what comes next. That's what we're going to discuss. So please let us have that discussion, okay? All right, comments. Who wants to start?
Well, when we talked about this previously and we were told that we were going to get some possible solutions, I thought, well, that's great. But none of the solutions that came forward are what I would call realistic solutions. And it all comes down to, unfortunately, it all comes down to money. And we're not a rich town. Balancing our budget was an ordeal, and we had to borrow from this fund and that fund, and we finally were able to push it through. But we don't have a lot of money in the bank, so to speak. Regarding reclamation, we're years away from a plant that's going to provide us tertiary effluent, and in the absence of federal or state grants, it's going to be years, I'm afraid, until we have the money to invest in reclamation, because that also is very expensive. And, you know, we really haven't done anything up here to increase our revenues, and that's our fault. I think, because of the new groundwater rules, that puts us between a rock and a hard spot. with the increased regulation and the quality of the water, and at the same time the degradation of our water supply, which we're taking steps on finding out where that's coming from and trying to mitigate that. As far as the sphere of influence and the annexation of properties, wouldn't come close to covering any of these so-called solutions that are before us. And on the surface, it seems kind of cold-hearted, and it must seem kind of threatening, you know, to some of you out there. And I don't like to be put in that position either of dictating that kind of policies, but when I'm told that our water experts can't guarantee clean, safe water to the residents of Morro Bay in its current situation, then I have to look at, first and foremost, my responsibility is to the citizens of Morro Bay. And like I say, that sounds a little cold, but really, I mean, that's my job. And I have to balance that out in my own conscience and try to be fair to as many people as we can. But at this point, I don't see any of those first three so-called solutions as being at all realistic.
Betty? I would respond to that by saying we've spent anywhere from $1 to $2 million on the desal plant to be able to handle brackish water from the Morro Valley. I'm not sure why $1 million in the Chorro Valley seems that outrageous. It does come from our water fund, which is flush, no pun intended. And I think that's a decision that we can make. I'm not saying that's the decision we should make, but I'm saying that we need to look at that in perspective of what we've already spent and how these costs would fall down. My preference would be that we not make a decision tonight. As much as it may or may not be separated from our future discussion of water, I feel that this is too much tied into that, and my preference would be that we postpone
the options that may come up as we move forward into this. I do like the idea of beginning communication, and obviously, as Mr. Grantham's pointed out, we have real limitations on our options out there. So it does seem most likely that we really, especially when you consider the stability of the state water project, when you look at the bigger conversation about that program and the potential expense, the potential ability of the state to continue the deliveries, and us here in Morro Bay on the edge of that delivery system as a smaller user, I have a big concern that the state water project is not going to be as dependable as we've come to expect. And when you look at that situation, all of our concerns are kind of moot, and we really need to start to look at taking care of ourselves and really having this conversation about local supply as much as possible. And that's really limiting to us, and it will be expensive. But I think it's really interesting, the idea of not making this decision tonight. I'm leaning that way, although I would like to at least begin some negotiations and some conversation. I'm going to listen to the other comments of the council members. I do have a concern, too, that we have not contacted the really major stakeholders in the area, which the three in my mind are Slo County, the regional and state water boards, and also the NEP. I think there's a real need for us to at least notify them of this discussion and ask for some of their input, because they have a real influence on the long-term outcome of this, and I hope that we could support each other with finding some solutions that will work for all parties as much as possible. This doesn't seem like a situation where everyone can come out smelling like roses, but I like to think that we can do the best we can in those regards. So I'm going to hold my comments for the rest until I hear the other comments of the council members.
Carla?
Well, I think pretty much everything's been shared up and down the line here, and my concerns are the same as everyone's, is about the quality of water and our lack of ability to guarantee that. And so I, you know, I'm going to have to, you know, respectfully, I certainly hear what you're both saying about wanting to include the other stakeholders, but I would like for the staff to begin having the opportunity to start working towards, you know, taking the next steps in this process so that we can guarantee, we can't guarantee the water out there, and we just need to move forward and how we're going to handle that. And I think we need to allow them to take the next step.
And I think ultimately you're right. Would you support the concept of at least notifying the major stakeholders, the three that I mentioned, I guess four if you count both water boards, and beginning that dialogue about our intents and including them in the conversation?
I'd probably refer that to staff and whether or not they feel there's a need to notice them in regards to this action.
Because it's a council policy decision. You go, ultimately, they won't get to weigh in on it. Certainly, I think noticing them doesn't do any harm. I wouldn't have any problem with giving them a copy of the letter that we've seen and letting them know sort of where we're at and where we think we're headed. I wouldn't have any problem with that.
The discussions on 1633, our historical data, our pumping, and what we've been doing out there and what we will be doing in the future, those agencies are all important. But the policy decision on whether you want to continue to provide services outside of the city limits is a separate situation altogether.
Okay. A couple of thoughts have come just listening to all this and talking about an assessment district, and I thought, well, maybe we could do that. Unfortunately, there's so few of you out there that even if you got an assessment like they're doing in Los Osos, $200 per property owner per month, even if you could afford to do that, it would only come out to $78,000 a year, which is not nearly enough to do the kind of work that we need to do to make the water safe for everyone to use. So that's not an answer. State water, and all of this is not something that we made an agreement at one time thinking that, you know, it was all going to be fine forever. It's not, unfortunately. The drought situation, the higher water standards, the problem with the nitrates that we did not used to have. So all of those things have kind of converged onto this one period of time that we're trying to figure out what to do next. And it's a safety issue for all of you. It's a liability issue for the city and a safety issue for all of you individual owners. So trying to come to the right solution, if the discussions happen and it's not going to work, then we come back and we look at the other alternatives again. But we've got to start and see where we can go with each of your individual situations. And so I agree with Carla. I think we should start this discussion tonight. We're not doing anything else. We're going to continue with exploring the other situations that we have to. But I would like to see us at least start having those meaningful discussions, and no decision's going to be made without having them with each of you.
Then can I clarify what you just said? Because I'm not hearing, I think, what staff is asking for. I'm hearing that you and Ms. Borchard are willing to start discussions, but are you also saying that you're not willing to make that choice to cut off the water yet?
Oh, I don't think we ever intended to do that immediately.
I thought the choice was to choose one of these four items tonight.
No. No, that was never something we were going to do immediately. Okay. That was never in my mind. No.
Okay. Let me just, it is recommended the City Council review the policy for providing water and provide direction to staff on whether or not to continue to provide water services outside the city. Mm-hmm. So I thought they were asking us to make that decision tonight. So you're saying you're willing to not make that decision tonight, but to start talks.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. Because I think we can't just make that decision without knowing what the ramifications are. And they are also individual and so separate. We have to have that information first. And then we can make a wise decision, hopefully.
But
yes, Carla?
I believe some of these, they may have the ability to do that with. On some
yes.
of these were our wells that we recognize that we do want to discontinue using and discontinue those contracts. So are you saying you don't want to allow them that?
I'm saying that tonight I would not be willing to say, okay, I want to definitely discontinue service to this
property.
Well,
we're not taking blanket.
I want to have the discussions to find out, okay, if we do that, what's going to be the ramifications and what do we have the ability to help them make themselves whole? That's what I want to know. Can we, as a city? Does that too
that
vague,
absolutely
or is that
makes,
clear?
Makes sense. And there was some questions about why we didn't discuss this policy with these owners. And I'll give the analogy. During the RDA discussions, many people thought we should go automatically and discuss with the school district and with other boards about the implications of that. And staff does not want to get too far ahead. We didn't know whether you were going to want to follow through and do an RDA. And, in fact, you didn't want to, so we didn't have those discussions about the implications of the RDA. It's the same way here. If your decision is tonight is no, we will continue to provide services outside the city limits, then we're not going to discuss that with them, and we'll go to Plan B, C, and D. If it is that you do not want to continue to provide services, we will then take each individual ones and come up with a game plan, talk to the individual owners, and come back to you with that that end game discussion. And some of them are much more difficult than other ones.
Okay.
But I would say that part of the problem has occurred in that some of these were agreements and some of them were done by resolutions and other ones was just done by staff without any approval from council or from agreements. And I do plan on bringing back to you, though, if you do before we do, is at least a resolution that says and the ordinance change that this can't occur in the future. I mean, it might be the end game is like you said, the end game might be that all 11 still are, but at least there won't be 13 or 12 or however many more that could be added on at a later time. So we are trying to create a policy decision that says in the future this won't be allowed to.
Well, and I think, do you need a motion about that? Because certainly I agree with
that's
that.
That's a separate issue, though.
Yeah.
I'd like to stay with this issue and ask if or make – I don't want a motion because I don't want to make a policy decision tonight. Mm-hmm. I think if we want to give direction to talk, have conversations, staff is already free to do that or we can direct them to do that.
All right.
So I'd be glad to make that motion.
Let me try and summarize what I think I'm hearing. And that's that we don't want to make just an automatic decision, no, we're going to cut off service. Okay, I think we're agreed on that right now. However, if it's possible, we would like to explore that option if it's something that we can do and make it hopefully whole for everyone. Not easy, but hopefully successful. Am I correct in that?
Yes, we're willing to have discussions. Okay. We're not willing to make a policy decision.
Now, does staff feel that that's enough direction to start having discussions with people about options and bring us back something when we have had our other discussions about the wells themselves?
I would suggest someone make a motion and so that we can understand it.
Well, I'm just asking if that's enough direction, if we make that motion.
What is the motion?
The motion is that the council would direct staff to have exploratory conversations with the residents of the Chorro Valley regarding their water service, but there will be no policy decision tonight about that.
Is that exploring alternative?
Move on one issue without knowing the bigger issues. This is one piece of that. It's going to impact the rest of it. And I think Mr. Smuckler made a good point of that when he made his comments that this regarding that. And so I buy that.
Okay.
But I'd like to keep some of these separate because some of them have other attachments to city properties and other things.
Well, but again, it would be individual discussions with each property owner as to the possibility of being independent from the city source.
Are you wanting to identify particular ones tonight?
Well, I just think that the water issues are separate. That 1633 and this water quality issue and the water flow and all these are all separate. I know they're all intertwined, but they're also separate issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to start convoluting them all together when we're dealing with this.
I don't think talking them together would convolute them.
Well, we're talking about connections right here.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
All right. Could we hear the motion again? I'm not clear. Say the motion again, please.
The motion is for council to direct staff to begin conversations with the property owners in the Chorro Valley regarding their source of water. Okay.
What, Rob?
But I think what we haven't had is feedback from... Okay, so what is it that you want? You want to negotiate, But I guess, is negotiation where you were looking at too, Ms. Peters, or were you just, when you said having conversations, what did that mean
for
you?
Well, the conversations that I would like them to have are there ways that they can separate themselves from the city water supply?
Okay. That would be the motion then, to have conversations about are there ways that we can separate our agreements.
I just have to make a comment, and I don't think we're being honest with these folks out here. I think we're sugarcoating the heck out of this. I think we're delaying the inevitable, and we're not being honest with them.
I'm being very serious, Mr. Grantham.
And we're great at having conversations. We're not so great at making decisions sometimes. But, boy, we sure like to have conversations. But that's my feeling on this.
Well, but what I'm looking at is if
can
those
we have
conversations.
A second? Okay, does anybody want a second?
Yeah, let's have a second.
I'll second for discussion.
Okay. What I'm looking at is that those conversations could be okay, property A, we're using access across your property, you've been supplying water to us for X number of years, that kind of thing. So, what can we do if we disconnected you to make you whole? Can we help you afford to put in a purification unit or something like that? That's what I'm looking for. And when we have those conversations, then they can come back and tell us, okay, if we do all these things to make these people whole, this is what it's going to cost versus a couple million dollars for a processing plant or a pipeline.
I think
that's what I'm hoping for.
I think that's a great point because even in our item number four, it says that they can't tell us what the item is.
Right.
And so, in terms of cost, and so how can we make a decision if we don't know how much money we're talking, if this is a money decision compared to the others? If one's $1 million, one's $1.5 to $2 million, maybe this will end up being the same amount. So when we have these talks, they will be able to come back with maybe some figures for us that would help us to have a comparison.
Okay. Does the motion clear to staff? No. Okay, what's not clear about it?
I just don't have it written down. Maybe the city clerk.
I have Council Member Winholtz moved to direct staff to have conversations.
Is your mic on?
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Council Member Winholtz moved to direct staff to have conversations with the Churro Valley property owners regarding their source of water. It was seconded by Council Member Smuckler.
Now we added about and the potential of disconnecting from the city.
This would be a friendly amendment.
The potential. The discussions would discuss the potential. We're not trying to do something bad to you, I promise. We're trying to work this out. We're trying to work this out, okay? All right, is that sufficient to start those discussions?
No, I'm a lawyer. Can I make a comment?
No, not now.
Madam Mayor, point of personal privilege. I would be happy for this one gentleman to make a comment. If the rest of the council would agree to
it. We can't let the one gentleman make a comment and not let everybody make a comment.
I think that we have that right to do that.
And unless you want to open the public hearing again to everyone, we don't, and we have a lot of work still
then,
to accomplish.
Then I would be glad to open it up. I think it's real important when we're dealing with people's lives, and this is life-threatening to them, that we allow them to have a response. And it would be good for me as a council member to hear that. And if they want to take 1 minute for half a dozen people that want to do that, or however many, I don't think that's too much to ask of our time.
All right. If the council wants to do that, how many people on the council are in favor of reopening the public hearing?
Possibility of water being shut off to our property. And I don't know what agreements were made at that time, but I believe that they should have notified her of the ramifications and the indications that were going to happen.
Okay.
That's one subject. The other thing is that I would suggest that if you're going to take the water away from all these people, that the cost of litigation with each one of these might come up to $500,000, $1 million. If you spend a quarter or half of the cost of a brackish water plant on disconnecting the people from water, and then you don't have a water plant treat the water, you're going backwards.
Thank you. Anyone else? 1 minute.
Hi. Bob Doerr, 340 Arcadia. We don't live in this area where you're going to threaten maybe to turn these people's water off, but I just wonder if You know, water, fresh water is a big concern for everybody now. I mean, you know, in 20 years, it's going to be a real concern all over. But anyway, I just wonder if you're going to continue to suck the groundwater from underneath these people after you've cut their water off, right? Because we're going to need the wells anyway, right? So I think maybe there might be a different solution.
Thank you.
Carrie Burton, Chorro Valley. One thing that I need to say, because it's on TV, is it's not just nitrates. It's coliforms from unpermitted septics that your overpumping has sucked our direction into our wells. That needs to be black and white. And also, 1633, these wells were supposed to be shut down until they have been complied with. The wells have been running and pumped, and I have the well production report showing that you guys have violated that order and continued to pump those wells. So there's more issues than taking our water. There's a lot of issues. The regional board needs to be involved. The estuary needs to be involved. The EPA and everybody else environmentally need to be involved with this decision because it is together. It is convoluted, not just taking our water. And it has exploded because of that. And that's not our fault. We did nothing. It was something that you guys have failed to comply with all these years, and now we're supposed to suffer as a group. We need to talk to you as a group, not individually with staff. That is not okay.
Thank you.
Hi, Bill Martini again, real quick. I think really the problem here, originally I was thinking it had to do with the supply of water. Apparently it's the water quality. When you get to nitrates, I just thought I'd mention one thing. They're what is called nitrate markers. One nitrate marker tells you if it's farm fertilizer. The other nitrate marker says it's from human. And you might check the nitrate markers because I believe it possibly is from sewage, from failed septics. You clean up the failed septics, and you will solve a lot of your water problems out there as far as quality. And that you might be able to reverse the quality and actually bring it back up where you can service these people. But check the nitrate markers and find out what kind of nitrates is your problem. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Russ Banner, Quintana Road. I think the most significant comment by one of the council members, Betty, was that we spent $2 million or so to do the desal plant, whereas this we're talking $1 million for a volume of water which is used about 14 times more, as far as I could see from Dylan's chart. And water is gold these days. So $1 million would seem to be a small amount to clean up water that's going ultimately to the city of Morro Bay, not only to us, but to the city of Morro Bay as well. Thanks.
Thank you.
Barbara Dore, Arcadia. $1 million is seeming really cheap, and I really support Councilwoman Weinholz's motion. These people should be talked to and understood, and it's a comprehensive water matter, and you should look at Elhurst or whatever it is, and before you make any decisions, wait to have all the facts and the costs. $1 million might be very cheap to clean up that well for future use. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. We'll bring it back to council. Okay, and again, the motion that's on the table is not talking about doing anything now. It's talking about discussing and learning, okay? So we have a motion. Any more discussion? Yes, I did. I just did. All right, all in favor?
Somewhere you want to make sure we talk to those people, or do you need to think we need to do it now?
Well, I'm thinking more along the lines of the notice that Mr. Wade referred to. We're letting them know where we're at.
So it's just a noticing thing?
Yes.
So we're having these discussions.
Got it.
Yes.
Well, I don't think we need a motion. I thought we were just giving direction. I don't want to put it in the form of a motion because I would hate then if we miss one notice of something, then they didn't comply with it because How are they supposed to decide which things they have to notice them for and which not?
Is that something we can bring back for our next discussion? Notification, who we want to notify and how and when?
I think you're talking about an informal notice that's just a letter that says, by the way, we're having discussions with the people and we're, as we're attempting to
this is where we're at. This is a big issue that we hope to have some collaborative approaches on as we move down the road.
Mm-hmm. Can we make that motion tonight, Rob? Okay. All right. Why don't you be specific about who you want noticed? NEP?
National Estuary Program, the county, and the regional and state water quality control boards.
Anybody else? Okay. Then you want to put that in form of a motion?
I think he did.
Did you need that again?
Oh, that's right. He did, and you seconded. I'm sorry. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? None. Okay. All right. That's it on public hearing. Should we take a short break before we start our other business? Okay, we'll take a short break. Thank you. It's not over. Okay, we'll be discussing it some more. Well, that cleared out the room. Okay. All right. Well, go to item C1, which is the resolution detailing strategies to prevent and reduce vacancies on the Embarcadero and to stimulate business. Rick, so nice of you to stick around.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council. At your last meeting on September 14th, the City Council reviewed a report on Tidelands leases, rental revenue structures, and considered a resolution that we prepared to outline some potential strategies for reducing vacancies and stimulating business on the city's Tidelands properties. You provided direction to amend that resolution. We have done that. It's included in this agenda item. I'll just very quickly outline the three issues that are included in the proposed resolution. Staff was authorized to offer all city Tidelands lease sites tenants that they can pay minimum annual rent quarterly instead of semi-annually. Also, City Council will support office-type uses on the second floor of City Tideland lease site properties for the purpose of reducing vacancies, provided those uses conform with any and all planning and zoning regulations and requirements. Finally, we are waiving the CPI increase, effectively waiving the CPI increase for 09-10, so that the rents, the minimum annual rents on the modern city leases will be set at the 08-09 minimum annual rent. There will be no CPI increase for those modern city leases. The two exceptions are the sites that had a five-year rental adjustment, and their rental five-year rental adjustment clause actually adjusted their rent lower than that CPI increase or that CPI waiver would have been. That is the resolution that we prepared tonight. There is one item I wanted to draw your attention to that we did not include in here that the council expressed, I think, an interest in pursuing or finding out more about developing a program for rental credits to reduce vacancies or encourage subtenants and improve the business environment on Embarcadero properties. That was described as $6,000 to $10,000 rent credits that could be provided to tenants or master tenants who would submit a plan to city staff. We did not. I tried to look at how we might put that into this resolution at this point, and it seems like, since it wasn't clear to me from your direction whether you wanted how you would like that program developed or whether that was an urgency item or something that could go over time, we left that out. We do understand that you would like to continue closely monitoring the situation. My recommendation to you is that we consider that, potentially even solicit information and solicit comments and proposals from tenants or chamber or other groups out there that might like to pursue that type of program. And if the vacancies and the business climate does get worse over the fall, we can return to you with a program that we could outline in memo format and then explore later later on in the fall. That would be the end of my presentation. I appreciate the mic's actually working tonight, and I'll answer your questions.
Okay, any questions for yes, Betty?
I have one question. One, thank you for explaining the omission of that item, and so you'll just come back to us when you think it's time, when you get some interest, it sounds like, from some tenant. My question has to do, and I'm not sure if it's for you, Mr. Algard, or for the council, but I'm not sure how to put this together. That no grandfathering of that space.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
And I guess the other confirmation would be that we will evaluate all of these actions at the end of this fiscal year and make appropriate adjustments as we see fit at that point.
What we can do on the agenda planning guide as well, we're trying to track things that you want to see come back in a year, your status reports, so we can certainly put this on for a year review, and you can revisit the resolution and see how things are going and make a determination as to whether or not you want to continue any of these, such as the CPI, et cetera.
And I had a good conversation with Mr. Algert earlier because we'd talked about some sort of local economic index to help us gauge our success or the need for further action. And he made a good point, really, when it comes down to it, the vacancy level is how we're going to gauge and see success and deem decide whether we need to take further action. So I thought that was a really pretty clear and honest way to look at this. And I do hope that we formally invite some ideas about this rent credit program and make sure that the different stakeholders are aware that we're willing to listen to them about ideas. I think that's a really good way to go with this.
Okay. Other comments on this?
My comment would be that it would be in the record, your comment about your assumption that this is what goes in is for its own self and that it doesn't continue after that. So I just like that part of the record.
Do we need to add wording?
I don't think it needs to be in the resolution as long as it's in Ms. Bauer's minutes.
Okay.
So we can refer back to them in the future.
Okay. All right. So other comments? Yes. Noah?
One thing that we did talk about earlier, Mr. Algert and I, was to help gauge these vacancies, to consider inviting Mr. Israel Dominguez to update his vacancy survey and to continue to play a role helping us monitor the situation. I believe the Business Forum is planning on doing that. I wonder, does the council want to encourage Mr. Dominguez to stay involved?
Absolutely. Doesn't matter.
As long as he's not on a retainer or anything.
But that's yes. Up to them to do.
Okay. I'd move resolution number 4709.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. All right.
Thank you.
Item C2. Continued discussion on State Water Resources Control Board once through cooling statewide policy. Bob.
Good evening again, Council. This is the third time in the last three meetings that we've had this on your agenda, so I'll be brief about where we are at. The State Water Board issued a notice of public hearing to receive comments on the proposed policy on the use of once through cooling for power plants. Attached to my staff report is a notice of that public hearing and the draft policy that they have been working on for approximately, I think, 3 years, since 2006 is when they first came out, that they were going to try to adopt a policy on once-through cooling for power plants. The proposed policy establishes standards to implement the Federal Clean Water Act, Section 316B, and reduce the harmful effects associated with cooling water intake structures on marine life. I've attended the September 8th and the September 16th hearing, which were the September 16th hearing was approximately 7 hours of public testimony. I didn't stay for it all because I was also had to be in San Jose later on that day for the League of California conference. But basically, there's two tracks pursuant to the policy that existing power plants must follow. Track one is that within a year's period, they have to install wet or dry cooling and reduce their water intake by 93%. Or track two, if that's not feasible, then to come up with other alternatives besides wet or dry cooling that would meet those standards within a certain period of time. And for the power plant in Morro Bay, it's 2015. It was a difficult process in coming up with comments, and that some of it is very technical, outside my expertise, obviously. And at the same time, it's very interesting, and it's one of those things is the policy does have major
issues involved with it, and I don't think we've seen the last draft of it. What will occur is there will be comment periods. The staff will have to respond to all those comments, and then they will possibly, what I believe, issue another draft policy before it goes for the board for consideration. But it's a difficult balancing act in that some policy is needed for guidelines, but at the same token, it needs revision also. It's one of those things, is no policy, but is a policy that doesn't get there all the way, is that better than no policy? So it's one, and it's very important, especially for the Morro Bay Power Plant, is exactly what that definition of intake flow is it the historical amount of inflow they've been able to use the power plant for? Is it the permit conditions that are allowed? And so that's something that needs to be.
Can I ask a question on that one while we're on it? Because I had a really hard time reading that sentence, and I'm wondering if it's not possible to take out the words after reduction on the third line in intake flow rate for each unit, because we're repeating that.
I'm using pretty much their language in their policy. I can probably go back and make sure I've got the exact quote from it, but that's why it's confusing.
Oh, okay, because it's their policy that's confusing, because it doesn't make sense. I mean, it's repeating.
I can go back and look to make sure I've got it quoted correctly, that exact paragraph, but basically.
Okay, if that's pulled right out, then okay, I understand.
That's just how poorly it's written. Really confusing.
Okay.
And then my next point is just the idea of what's feasible and how is that going to be calculated, and operational and structural controls that would be in place, and they really need criteria and standards to know what those mean, so there's not any loopholes. The draft policy, even down to the next one, which was, just they go back and forth about talking. This is about intake structures in the bay and estuary, but then all of a sudden they talk about offshore. And certainly I believe I think that's a very easy one for them, correct, but you wouldn't want someone to say, oh, this doesn't apply to Morro Bay because it's not an offshore intake structure. And my next point is just necessary for operations. I don't even know if this one applies to the Morro Bay Power Plant, because I don't believe that is even possible for them to reach that reduction area. But still, it's something that what is necessary for operations is not defined. And also, my next point about appropriate mitigation projects should have a better definition to it. And same with my last one, is just a clarification of exactly what the Regional Water Board satisfaction means. So there were many others probably that could have been added to it, but I knew these were the ones that really shined and needed clarification in my mind. If it's possible, it's signed for the mayor, but if all council members are in agreement and it's a 5-0 vote to send this, then I would certainly change it to include everybody's signature so that we can send it up all together.
A couple of edits in the very last paragraph. Up until then, you've always capitalized the word policy. On the third line, it appears twice without capitalization. And also on that same line, moves us one step closer to implementing state law. And on the second paragraph on the first page, again, all the way through, you've referred to the state with a capital S, and I don't know which is correct or not, but in that paragraph it appears twice with a small s, first line and the second of the last line, third of the last line. That's all. Okay. Okay, discussion?
Comments?
Yeah. I think overall it's, you caught things I didn't catch. Thank you very much. I think the comments are good. Your third bullet, is it amenable to you and the council to include a time frame on that? Or is there already one included? I was thinking like within a year.
Track two would have to be, I believe. I can check to make sure, and if there's not, then not. But my understanding and remembering is that track two has to be completed by that 2015 deadline.
For whomever.
It needs to be clarified.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
You can certainly add that if it needs to be clarified.
I'm going to float this. I don't think it will go anywhere, but I'd like to see, if you look at the chart on page 8, where you'll see that Morro Bay is listed in the number 16, because of when their contract runs out, I'd like to see us ask them to move us up to number 11 with South Bay Power Plant, because then it coincides with their contract ends in the end of 2012. And being the community that they are in, I think that we can ask for that if we want to.
I'm confused. I'm not sure what you're asking.
I'm asking that Morro Bay no longer be listed as item 16, but be listed under item 11 along with South Bay Power Plant. That would be that it would say South Bay Power Plant and Morro Bay.
And why?
Because the requirements for South Bay end in 2012 rather than in 2015, and this coincides to when Dynergy's contract runs out, and so that would meet all their requirements, or not theirs, the board's requirements.
So you're adding another paragraph?
Another bullet. Mm-hmm. That would be regarding page 8. So it probably would have to be fit in next to the last.
You're right.
And then I'm happy.
Any other comments?
I think this is an excellent letter, and I thank Mr. Schultz for putting it together.
I would also just mention what Jack McCurdy said about CAPE. Although there's a question of how much influence we really have on a state agency, this policy is going to have major ramifications, not only for the citizens of Morro Bay, but for the whole state of California. It's going to be an interesting policy and how it's adopted and how it can be worked on. A lot of the state agencies got together to get the policy to this further. It's whether they can carry it further to make it clear and enforceable is going to be interesting to see, but I certainly think we should stay on top of it, understand it, and know the ramifications to Morro Bay. Because even if they can go to track two, there's that mitigation plan or project that would go in front of Regional Water Quality Control Board, and we need to know how we can participate in that. So I'll keep you informed.
All right. So if we approve this letter with the comments and additions as made, do we want all council members to sign it? Are you all willing to sign it?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, is that going to affect your ability to negotiate the extension to 2015?
No.
Okay.
No.
So it's certainly not a binding thing, and it's a more encouragement.
Well, and that's why we didn't put in the date. It's just at the earliest possible time. If we can't manage it before that, we can't.
And if we decide we're not going to do a contract with them to 20, I mean, I don't know that the council's made that decision to go to 2015, have we?
No, not yet.
No, it doesn't close it down, and I think one of the things I'll be bringing forward also is just the idea of, is even 2012 is a few years away, and if this policy is adopted within the next year, then it needs to come to the Regional Quality Control Board just on its current permit, its administrative permit, which would involve all of those issues of track one and two. So it would reestablish so that they encourage meeting these milestones of using less water intake than is currently done. So I don't think it would hamper our negotiations.
Okay. All right, who wants to make the motion?
What motion?
Yeah.
I move that we approve the letter written to the State Water Resources Control Board with amendments that were with changes that were commented on.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None.
This is due on the 30th, so if you could come by maybe tomorrow sometime to sign, that would be great.
Okay. So everybody needs to get by there tomorrow and get their signature. Okay. All right. Moving on. Item D1.
And this is declaration of a water emergency and institution of mandatory conservation requirements during the state water project shutdown. And Bruce and Dylan, it's a toss-up. Who's going to talk this time?
I'll lay the
Your
framework
turn.
Out,
okay.
Madam Mayor and council members. The state water project has set a firm date of November 1st, so they moved it back, and they've shortened the time frame. Possibly, it may be. They're saying it'll begin on the 1st and could be as short as 2 weeks or could possibly be 3 weeks. We're not going to find out until we get further into that maintenance period. So that was good news. But we still think it's a good idea to be proactive and prepared for conserving water and potential shortages in our supply. Just in terms of giving you some understanding of the framework we're operating under, we've been one of the most conserving communities in the state for quite some time. And several years ago, we codified mandatory water conservation requirements that have been in place on our books for years, and this is what we're coming to you with. There are five levels of conservation with varying degrees of conservation in terms of the associated emergency or the available supply that there is. And we've also got, that's codified under our books, the ability for the Public Services Director to determine which level is most appropriate. It generally involves, and they're formed in the levels of emergency vary from normal to moderate to critical to severe to emergency. The emergency, again, it would go into effect on November 1st for at least 2 or 3 weeks. The resolution is attached to your staff report. If you have any other questions on water supply, demand, or use characteristics, I'll kind of give those to Dylan.
And how is notice going to go out, just so that everybody knows?
We've got the notice prepared. We're waiting on this action tonight, actually, to send them to the printer. But we'll mail them to every resident in Morro Bay.
Okay, so not just the people that get the water bill, but everybody?
Every physical address.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Questions? Comments? Rick?
You know, we're definitely in a severe water shortage. We've got, and statewide, twice as many people live in Southern California than in Northern California, but yet Northern California has twice the water supply that Southern California has. Because of because they stopped pumping the Delta due to the salmon situation, the reservoirs in nearby Fresno now are so low that they're down to 30% of capacity, and they're not able to irrigate farms, and farms are just dry dust bowls now, and it's affecting the economy, it's affecting people's lives, their jobs, and all this. I'm of the mind that we adopt number C, or letter C, and we not wait until November 1st, that we get this out as soon as possible, and that we not necessarily stop it when state water goes back on, but we look and see what our precipitation levels are at that time and what kind of a rainy season is predicted and how we're doing. But I don't see a need to wait until November 1st. I think that we all realize that we have problems with water and water supply, and I don't think that we need to base all this on the fact that state water is going to shut down for maintenance. I think that regardless if it was or not, these are still implementations these are still measures that need to be implemented.
I would like to say thank you. I was ready to go for level D, but I'm willing to compromise at C. I think we need to get real serious, and I'm glad that you said we need to start early, because I think that's one of our issues. And I totally agree with you. In fact, I went to the trouble of adding a phrase, and we could just change it to C, the D to C on my things, if you'll just pass that down, Mr. Grantham. And basically what I did here was just look at the fourth whereas and
because in 330, the council has the privilege to say which one of these levels we want to go at, so I thought this whereas could replace the whereas that's in here. And then on the bottom, it flows right in, that the Public Services Director is hereby authorized and directed to implement, and will change the word critical to the word severely, and change the letter to C instead of D. And I would concur with what Mr. Grantham said.
Just, I will get to comments from this side too, but I think we need to, just for the public watching, let them know what we're talking about. You do have a city that has been very careful with their water use for a long time now. And what we're talking about with C is outdoor irrigation prohibited between 10 and 4 p.m., 10 a.m. and 4 p.m., and that we would be on the even-numbered addresses, can water on Wednesdays and Sundays, odd-numbered addresses only on Tuesdays and Saturdays, and no water to be used for cleaning driveways, patios, parking lots, sidewalks, etc., and washing cars with a hose is prohibited. So I think that people have to be aware these are pretty strong restrictions. And you're saying it's going to start when, Bruce? And
November 1st.
November 1st, and go for?
2 weeks, possibly
two
3 weeks.
Okay. Okay, I just want to make that, get that out there so people who are watching know what we're talking about. Noah?
And actually, I suggest that we go ahead and outline some of the other components as well, because there's definitely an impact to the business community. Who would like to do that?
Well, I think the biggest one is to when at restaurants when you offer water, and if you look at the actually normal times, they should be doing that anyways.
They
and
do.
We just haven't been implementing that.
They do. The restaurants I've been to, all I have to ask,
all they ask.
If I want water. Yeah.
And I think it's important too that within
onto that. So it seems like you're looking at a prolonged period of time. It might have been a little bit, or I don't know how long of a period of time you're looking at. A 2 week period would have been pretty quick. We would have to get the word out to folks through a public service announcement, Channel 20. We'd add a little bit more information in the brochure that's about ready to go out. But we're going to, for example, if you'll see on Major C, number 8, we're going to have to provide these handouts to all the businesses. You know, all visitor-serving facilities. So there will be some cost to that. Mm-hmm. And we're going to key it to measure to the severe level. So so at any rate, the enforcement would vary from notification, actually to fines, and ultimately in interrupting their or disconnecting their water service if necessary.
There's usually a warning that happens first, and then they're notified if they're ignorant of the fact, and then after that, then the hammer comes down.
Okay, Carla?
Well, I would hope we would lead by example. I'm tired of seeing our own city water running down Harbor Street on the weekends.
We irrigate, so we're going to have to curtail our irrigation. Even the fire department's offered to run, has told us they will run dirty, so with their vehicles. So, I mean, we're a major participant in that, too.
I think that's a really important component, and I definitely see that involvement taking place and that concepts being developed along those lines. I had a couple suggestions to help us with our outreach and public education. I think we do definitely have within our websites some good information for people about conservation opportunities within the water conservation section. I would like to include our green building incentive program somewhere in there. I couldn't find that within the water conservation section as far as an informational link. Seems like a fairly important concept to have there. We aren't mentioning rainwater catchment or gray water systems as an option within the water conservation
Got
link.
It.
Okay. The other thing that's interesting that I think I would like to update the council on is I've been working with Mr. Doris, the building inspector, on this gray water workshop that Soil Greenbelt's offered to help organize and implement. And we have identified the 10th, most likely, of November as a date for a workshop. It would be the North Coast workshop hosted here in Morro Bay. Soil Greenbelt has contacted or is in the process of contacting Cayucas and also Los Osos to help fund the costs of that workshop. And I'm going to continue to work with Mr. Doris about outreach opportunities and how we want to really focus that workshop to be a public outreach and an educational opportunity beyond just gray water. So the timing of this and the state water shutdown would be a really good one for us to be there and accessible to the community and let them know that there are some solutions that they will help them to empower themselves and hopefully reduce the burden on the city to supply the water. Potentially we can get a little more decentralization with our water supply. So I just wanted to update on that, and I'll continue to work with Mr. Doris and Soil Greenbelt to organize this event.
Appropriate timing during the shutdown.
Yes, very.
Okay. Other comments? Okay, ready for a motion? Rick, you want to?
Well, we should include a timeline, so I need some direction on. Like I say, I'd rather start sooner than later. So.
Well, the notices are going to go out in the next couple days.
Printing time is what's going to be our limiting factor, so it takes about 7 days to get a print run this big done. So we could start, let's say, a week or a week and a half ahead of the state water shutdown and then run it a week or two long if you guys would like to do that. I'm open to suggestions. We just have the practical aspect of preparing the flyers and printing them and actually delivering them, which I would think would take about a week to 10 days.
Well, the 12th of October is Columbus Day. I would even go with, say, the 13th. That should give you plenty of time, and that's, I think, soon enough.
I'd want to make sure we have adequate time to notice everyone.
Yeah, that's why I didn't want to do it like on the 5th or 6th. We'll give them a couple of weeks to do it.
Well, how long are you anticipating having this?
That's not
going to
be a couple weeks.
And he said a week.
So they're only going to have their notices for a week. If they're absentee, then they're not going to have their notices till they come.
That would give you 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. That there would be no stop date on it at this point until a future date when we determine if there's adequate precipitation and adequate rainfall in the future.
Mr. Grantham, could that potentially time frame then be another resolve that now therefore it be resolved that this will begin on October 19th?
Yeah, sent out by the 13th to begin on the 19th.
Without a stop date?
We wrote it so that we could. It's an emergency ordinance in nature, so we can leave it in effect as long as necessary.
Yeah, but I guess I'm concerned. You're telling people they can't wash their cars all winter.
Some people can't
afford to wash their cars.
You can. You just have to fill your bucket up with your hose and throw your bucket of water on your car. You just can't stand there with a hose for 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I've done that. I mean, it's.
You want to come and do my van? I can't reach a bucket on the top of my van.
Bring it to my house.
but I'm serious. I mean, we're talking about people not being able to wash their cars for an indeterminate amount of time. I'm not sure that that's what we want to do. I'm not in favor of doing that. Unless we're proven to be in an emergency situation for that long.
Can we look at downgrading to the level next level once we get our water back on?
Yeah,
possibly.
Yeah, that'd be fine. Go down to B. That's
to level B once our water's back on, or if we have adequate rainfall beginning.
That'd be great.
So, do you mean perhaps going to B when the shutdown's over?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd go along with that.
Okay, so I'm trying to write something. So that our third resolve will be that we begin on the 19th. And then it will go through the state water shutdown. And at that point, want Mr. Ambo to make the decision?
We say December 1st, we revert back to B.
Okay. And then at December 1st, we revert back to B.
Okay.
That's fine. And you know that if things get worse, we will come to you and tell you.
And that's fine.
We would expect you to.
That's fine.
or if we're raining, would we be discontinuing?
Right.
I mean, we're supposed to have an El Nino.
We have rainstorm.
I'm trying to be positive here.
Okay. So December 1st, unless there's rain first?
Well, I think you have to say significant rain.
And
yes.
What I've read is even with significant rain,
it's not gonna
our drought situation.
I don't think we have to put the rain in. Let's just say, you know, we'll cut it off December 1st unless
Thank
the emergency
you.
Is still severe.
That's fine.
Okay.
Okay. So, so, Mr. Grantham, are you willing to do this whereas in place of this whereas? And then this is the addendum to this to make level C, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And then we're doing a third whereas about the dates.
December 1st.
Okay.
Do you need that again, Bruce?
I'm writing it.
For the three-week shutdown, you didn't
adjust that. But it... it's a declaration of a water emergency and institutional conservation requirements during the state water shutdown. You've got a point. But I don't know if we can capitalize on the water emergency aspect and acknowledge that we're in a water emergency. The state's been in a water emergency for 3 years.
City attorney, are we okay?
I would suggest you give that leeway of when the shutdown will be instead of putting the date as December 1st, and we can report back to you at the end of the shutdown. We're going to know more during the month of November. We can report back on November 1st with how long it's going to be, when exactly it'd be over, and then you can make a determination of when to stop or continue the.
But we can start on the 19th in preparation for.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What does that mean as far as noticing people, though? I mean, we're going to send out this notice ahead of time, and then
part of ours is
do we have to notice them all over again that we stopped? That's why having the end date is kind of a good thing.
I don't think you have any good idea.
But we don't know when the shutdown is going to end.
That day we won't know. The shutdown is scheduled tentatively. So tentatively it was originally scheduled for October 19th for 3 weeks. Now we kind of all squealed and got them to push it back a few weeks. And that's a big deal for us from the demand perspective. But you go, we won't know whether it's ending on the 14th or the 21st, probably until the 14th. To be totally honest, I'll probably get a phone call and find that out. So I would leave that out of the resolution. The way that this is intended to function is that you give some leniency and some power to Bruce as the public services director to take the steps he deems necessary to have adequate water supply. And so I would pull the specific dates and times out of there. We'll follow that direction that you've given to us. We'll start it on the 19th in anticipation of that shutdown, and then we'll carry it through. I would also anticipate that when we get out of that we will send out a notice again to the, I think it's the right thing to do.
Okay.
And then encourage further conservation from that point, but on a different level of severity or on a voluntary basis.
I think it's important to note, too, as it was in the staff report, that the savings that we...
The Public Works Director is hereby authorized and directed to and insert implement severely water supply conditions section 13.04.345C of the Municipal Code in conjunction with his powers of enforcement as outlined in section 340, and it continues as is. And at a third... resolve that now therefore it be resolved that this begin October 19th, 2009.
Second.
Does that work?
Yeah, we can take that and run with it.
Okay. All right. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. All righty. Moving on. D2, this is approval of a resolution regarding the city's intention to sell the city-owned property at 781 Market and the property at the corner of Pacific and Market in Morro Bay. This is Brannigan's and the parking lot across the street.
Good evening. The city obtained ownership of the property located at the northeast corner of Market Avenue and Pacific Street in 2001. There's no physical address of that. That's where we call it the northeast corner of Market Avenue and Pacific Street. There's an APN number, but it doesn't really have a designation street. So it's that corner lot that we're talking about that's a parking lot. We obtained that parking lot in 2001. It's approximately 14,387 square feet and is currently approved with an asphalt-paved parking lot of 40 spaces. It was purchased using $500,000 of the parking in lieu fund. The other property that we are discussing that putting up for sale is 781 Market Street, which was purchased in 2002. Although that's when the purchase agreement was approved, it didn't close escrow until the middle of June of 2003 because there were problems with the close of escrow dealing with hangover tenants and also property reports showed deductions from and inspections that we were able to negotiate further deductions in the purchase price. So it was a long escrow and didn't close. We didn't actually obtain ownership until 2003. That project, that property is where Brannigan's is. It's been subject of RFPs along with the property down below. The resolution for intent to sell does not include the parking lot down below of Brannigan's. It only includes the Brannigan's property, which is 6,769 square feet. The government code allows you to pass a resolution of your intent to sell that property and set a public hearing. Pursuant to the resolution 5109, you would be giving your notice of your intent to sell those two city-owned real properties. It would set a public hearing for October 12, 2009 to for any person to protest the sale of that property. So it's in front of you now. If, in fact, you do pass the intent and then you follow through with the motion on October 12th, then the city would obtain offers or possibly bring forward a purchase for the sale of those two properties.
Okay. Questions? Comments?
I would mention, I did not, it's in my staff report, that because $500,000 was used of parking and lieu fund money, that if you do sell back that property, $500,000 would have to go back into the parking and lieu fund.
Okay. Comments?
I just have one comment. I think it's appropriate that we separate the lower parking lot from this Anthony's, and I also think it's appropriate that we include the other parking lot because it was the original Anthony's parking lot, and it would help whoever gets the building to make a success.
Right.
I'd also like to consider that as we move forward with this opportunity that we consider using the $500,000 from the parking lot that sale, if we sell this property, that we could use that for the parking and lieu fees to purchase or exchange funds for the parking lot down below and use this money and buy that with parking and lieu fees to free up the general fund money.
Okay. Motion?
Motion to approve D2.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Well, that was quick. Okay. Number D3, discussion of city's noticing policy. Andrea.
Once again, good evening, Mayor and Council. The City Council discussed the issue of public outreach and noticing Council has discussed the issue of public outreach and noticing throughout the years. In September of 2005, the city attorney compiled by the city occasionally provides mailers concerning meetings or other forms of notification in the event the topic is of great interest. And one example is the recent notification with the redevelopment feasibility study that was sent to all addresses in the city of Morro Bay. We do, though, realize that it is very difficult to achieve a balance between the cost of additional noticing, including staff time, versus the responsibility of the public to make themselves aware of things that are happening in the city government. However, we believe that a few changes can be made based on the concerns that were voiced that we think will address the overall noticing. It will certainly improve the noticing, and there's not a significant increase in costs. And we're suggesting the following. The specific change that we're suggesting is for City of Morro Bay capital projects that require an environmental impact report, we will provide courtesy noticing, which I've included an attachment with your staff report, for all meetings that pertain to the said project. The courtesy noticing will be provided to stakeholders in the project who are not otherwise noticed from the legal through the legal noticing requirements for the EIR document. Stakeholders will be responsible for providing the city a contact email, as well as keeping that information updated. Secondly, we're talking about amending our homepage slightly. Currently, we have calendar of events, and I think a lot of times people don't relate meetings to events. They think of events as fun activities like an Arbor Day or a Rock to Pier Run. So we're changing the wording there to calendar of meetings and events, and then also changing the view all events to view all meetings and events. To go back to the courtesy noticing, our concept there is an email. We're talking about noticing of meetings that would pertain to the project that requires an EIR, and of course the major project that we're talking about now is the wastewater treatment plant. So as meetings became available, our stakeholder list would be sent an email similar to what we've done or what Dylan talked about with some of the nitrate issues that we've dealt with in the past. That's our suggestion at this point, and I'm certainly open to your comments.
Okay. Any comments, questions?
I had a couple questions. Yeah. I think you just answered one. And I think this is a really good move for us, and I appreciate the work on this. As we move forward into this and probably formalize it, do you anticipate an invitation, especially for the JPA discussion and stakeholders there? How would stakeholders in an existing process be notified of this new opportunity? Sounded like you said that they would be notified, but I just wanted to confirm that.
What we'd probably do is look at some past public comment periods where people have talked and look at some of the significant groups that have been there and indicated interest. The Otter Project is somebody that's already contacted me about their interest. Certainly anybody that's spoken publicly and indicated that they're interested in the project. So we'd start that list, as well as I would think announcing that issue at our JPA meetings and let people know that if you're interested in being contacted on a project that requires an EIR, certainly let us know your contact information. And we can put you on that email list. It's fairly simple, and I think it will work fairly well.
Will there be will the link be directly on the homepage for someone to sign up, or where just geographically? Where do you think it would?
We can work with that. At this point, I was thinking that we would probably get more people to sign up from our contacting them at the get-go to start an initial list. Mm-hmm. But we could certainly have a link on the website. It could be on the home page. Could be on multiple pages.
Okay. Why not?
Okay. Multiple pages, like 1, 5, 20. Well, when you go now, you find things on multiple pages.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's probably late. That's why it was funny.
That's okay.
My last question was, you'd mentioned at our management partners strategy meeting just recently that there was you're working on a concept for the general public to be notified about meetings and somewhat of a newsletter format that would be separate from this. But I just wanted to confirm that.
Absolutely. And the thought behind the newsletter really is more not so much meetings, because I think that information, I think once we clear up some of the things on the homepage, I think that information is fairly available. But I'm really talking about updating, similar to the updates that the council gets about what's happening with projects. Certainly if there's a meeting of huge interest, but in general just what's happening with the city, what's going on with projects, that sort of thing.
Other questions?
I have a comment.
Okay.
And maybe it is a question as well. I agree that 1 and 2, your suggestions are helpful. One of the issues that was raised tonight was in terms of timing, that they felt a 5-day notice wasn't sufficient. And I look back on the back page of this document that you've included for us, and the second...
It's coming to council, and we're not ready for it yet. So there's two different issues between the notice, which I certainly believe we need improvement on, mm-hmm. and figuring out how much time is reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
But we want to make certain that's not the same as providing all the backup documentation, which is the 72 hours beforehand.
Right. I understand. Then let me ask you another question. If you look at the back of this document, if you have access to it, and...
2005.
This is the report that you did. I believe this particular section is under CEQA. If you look on the previous page, it says CEQA.
And since we're talking about major capital projects, and I think the kind of issue that came up at the JPA the other day wasn't the EIR per se, because it's not out yet, but it's in preparation for. And I think the way that Ms. Luker has worded this here is helpful, because it says capital projects. My question is, does negative declarations need to be added to her number one in addition to the EIR? And I wanted to make it parallel to what it is for the CEQA, even though it's not a, we're going beyond, but I think it's helpful. So would that fit into her number one on page two?
Are we talking specifically now about the JPA project or just in general?
Just, well, as she has it worded, for City of Morro Bay capital projects that require, could we insert negative declaration and an environmental impact report? Or are you thinking it's not necessarily appropriate for neg decs?
We certainly could. My concern is knowing who those stakeholders are when we issue the negative deck. Usually with an EIR or a heightened project, you know who the stakeholders, because there's been some preliminary hearings even before you went out for EIR, kind of like this one when we came to you and said we're going out. Many times when a negative declaration is issued on projects, we know the property owners around it, and they're given notice anyways. But I'm
okay. Then I would drop that. And then could I say in the second sentence, the courtesy noticing will be provided to stakeholders and individuals, certainly other people in the public that were speaking the other night, if they notice us that they want to be on the list.
Sure.
I don't think it needs to be limited to groups.
No, and I think I want to be clear, and I think Councilmember Winsholtz hit on it, but our intent is to let people know of the meetings where these things will be discussed, and perhaps we can include in our courtesy noticing that additional information will be available on the city's website for you to research. But our intent is to notice meetings when this project will be discussed.
Then, if there's no further comment, I would move approval of her to noticing items on page two with the addition to at individuals after stakeholders.
Seconds.
And any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Future agenda items? None. Noah?
I have two. Okay. They're related. Basically, in regards to our sewage treatment plant discussion, but what I'm suggesting is that we perform some evaluations from the city's perspective outside of the JPA agreement. One of those would be an evaluation of our water reclamation options and considering options within that have been looked at and new ones within both the Morro and Chorro Valley. Then the second would be a city evaluation of alternative local biosolids management options. So essentially the idea is giving us as a city the opportunity to look at our local options separate from Cayucas and have some information that would help us make decisions as we move forward.
I'd support that.
I'm not sure I understand the purpose. I mean, you're talking about the facility and the design and everything that's already been adopted, and now I don't know what you're looking at. I'm not sure what you want.
Well, it would be because, as I've been told and understand as part of this EIR process, and I don't want to get too far into arguing the case or not, so let me know if I'm crossing the line, but the idea would be that this is beginning the evaluations that we're going to be held to anyway as we move through the EIR process as a JPA, looking at alternative options for reclamation, looking at uses for reclamation, and then as well with the biosolids management. Beginning that process now separately from the JPA so we have as much information as possible.
Could be a separate project. But I don't know how those. What I
don't want to comment is how much staff time that would take, whether that takes outside experts. But if it's something you want to begin the process with, I think we could bring back a staff report. I just don't I defer to the city manager. Does that kind of clarify the issues?
It does, and I certainly understand that we have some heavy burdens on our staff, especially in regards to water situations. So I would like at this point to not initiate something that requires outside counsel or increased cost to the city, but to do as much of the internal analysis and evaluation as possible so we have those that information developed to a certain degree that will get us a further step down the road with those options.
Okay. I'm assuming you would write the staff report on this item for discussion?
I guess I could, but I would also be dependent on the city staff to help with this evaluation.
Well, for the evaluation, but for the discussion of whether we want to do that or not, which is what you're agendizing, you would write the staff report for that to bring back for us to consider.
I'm actually suggesting that we don't consider taking that action, but that we move forward with the evaluation, and that comes back as a future
agenda item. I think you're suggesting an agenda item that the council approved going ahead with two separate studies, separate from the JPA, and that needs to be something that we vote on, but we can't vote on that tonight because you have to bring it up as an agenda item.
I think that the deal is that it's a two-step process,
yeah,
that we bring it up to talk about whether we want to even talk about it, and then we would make a vote to say, yes, we'll look at it.
Okay.
So that initial report,
I don't mind developing that staff
report. You would bring forward.
Okay. And I'll work with staff on developing that.
Council,
we're trying to avoid staff time. That's what I'm saying.
Well, no, just to make sure that I'm developing something that they have some input in is really the courtesy
I'd
like to extend.
Okay, Andrea first, then Carla.
And I will throw out that I think it's very important that we look at perhaps in that, well, it would have to be in that presentation of estimated staff time because, as Council Member Smuckler noted, at this point we're knee-deep.
Yeah.
Neck-deep, perhaps, is a better word. And so I'm concerned about time invested in evaluation. But we can take a look at that.
Carla, you had a comment?
Andrea was trying to get your attention, but and as much as I appreciate and would like to certainly support Noah's two ideas, I at this time feel that staff is extremely loaded with issues we have compliancy timelines and things with, so I would be worried about their accessibility right now. So if you can write the reports, I'd be willing to support it. But
I will plan on doing that.
All right, so do we have three council members that want to follow this agenda item? That's one, two. I'm not in favor, Rick.
Mayor Peters.
No. Carla.
We have two people look at it, if someone does it.
I will point out, Mr. Schultz informed me that we do have some things that have been done initially on reclamation, so there is some studies, I believe, that have been done that we could certainly resurrect and bring back just for some information that might be helpful and would not take some staff time. So I wanted to throw that out.
Well, lacking three people, we're not going to take staff time anyway. So it's up to you to make the report and bring it back to us for consideration. And if it then is approved, then the staff would be involved, okay?
That sounds great.
Okay. All right, and what was your other one? You said you had two?
Those were the two.
That was the two, okay. Yeah. All right, anybody else? Carla, do you have anything? All right, then our closing quote, please.
A well-developed sense of humor is the pole that adds balance to your step as you walk the tightrope of life. William Ward.
I like that. With that, we're adjourned. Thank you.